This is Audible.
The Wedding Dress, Four Weddings and a Fiasco, Book 4. Written by Lucy Kevin. Narrated by Eva Kaminsky. Chapter 1. Despite the downpour, Anne Farley looked like an angel as she hurried up the walk to her front door. A very wet angel. But even soaked to the skin, with her long hair and dress both utterly drenched, she was beautiful. Gareth Cavendish had been waiting in the rain in front of her house for the past hour, enough time to make some calculated guesses about the woman who lived in the old-fashioned but obviously well-cared-for home. For starters, there was a white picket fence running around it. Gareth didn't know many people who actually had white picket fences, but it spoke to him of a family that had lived there happily for a long time. Of course, looks could be deceiving, as the contents of the envelope in his jacket pocket proved. The case was straightforward. Jasmine Turner, a 21-year-old woman from Oregon, wanted to track down the father who had abandoned her and her mother. She'd hired Richard Wells's law firm to represent her. Since leaving the police force 6 months earlier and starting Cavendish investigations, Gareth had worked several private cases for Richard. Most, unfortunately, involved cheating spouses. The Farley case, however, came with a large potential bonus. If Jasmine won her case and was awarded half of her biological father's estate, Gareth would end up with an additional payday, enough to keep his new private practice comfortably afloat. As Anne moved closer to the front of the house, Gareth saw that she was smiling. How, he wondered, could someone be that happy about being caught in the rain? Even more peculiar was the fact that when she finally spotted him standing in the rain by her front porch, she didn't seem at all suspicious. Instead, she smiled directly at him, stunning him for a moment. "Hello?" she called out. "Are you looking for someone?" Quickly regrouping, he asked, "Are you Anne Farley?" She nodded and sent another of those pretty smiles his way. He moved up onto her covered porch and was about to reach into his jacket for the envelope when he looked into her eyes and stopped cold. Her eyes were the most incredible shade of blue, like the ocean on a perfectly sunny day. Even in the middle of a rainstorm, the way she was looking at him warmed him through. Gareth needed to serve her and get out of there. Yet, in spite of the rain and the situation, he wasn't in a hurry to leave. Not with such a lovely woman standing in front of him. He pushed the thought away as he finally grabbed the envelope and held it out to her. "This is for you." She took the envelope, opening it with the obvious excitement of someone expecting a pleasant surprise. While she took out the legal papers, he realized she was close enough for him to smell the sweet floral scent of her perfume. She finished reading and held out the envelope to him. "You've made a mistake. You have the wrong person."
"Your parents were Edward and Chloe Farley?"
Anne nodded. "Yes, but..."
"Then I'm afraid there hasn't been any mistake. I'm here to serve you with papers relating to your father's other daughter."
Anne shook her head sharply. "No, I'm sorry. You've got this all horribly wrong. My father didn't have another daughter. It's just me."
"He did have another daughter, Ms. Farley. Her name is Jasmine Turner. She is his biological daughter as a result of a relationship he had with Deirdre Turner 22 years ago.
Even though Gareth couldn't help but feel bad for blindsiding her with the news, he had to do his job.
"This is official legal notice that you're being sued for a share of your father's estate."
People never reacted well to being told that they were being sued, and he knew what to expect. Anger, disbelief, shock, dismay, and then resentment. What he wasn't expecting was that Anne would simply push the envelope back into his hand, letting go so that he had to either catch it or let it fall into the puddle gathering on the porch at his feet.
"I'm sorry, Mr. Cavendish, Gareth Cavendish, and you can't just give me back these papers. You've been legally served with them now."
"While I don't understand how a mix-up like this could happen, I do know that you've served these papers to the wrong person, because my father would never have done something like this." She said it perfectly pleasantly, even a bit apologetically, as if she was sorry Gareth had wasted his time. Underlying her every word was a certainty that told him she wasn't going to budge from her position. With that, she put her key in the lock of her front door.
"Miss Farley," he said again, "I'm certain there hasn't been a mistake."
"And I'm certain there has been. Good night." She stepped through the door and shut it behind her. Chapter 2 Anne's home was full of happy memories, from the knick-knacks collected by her mother to the old photographs on the walls. She had made a few changes over the years since her parents' deaths, but had kept it bright and happy, with hints of its classic past. Most of the furniture in her bedroom, for example, consisted of antique pieces she'd inherited, such as the large four-poster bed that had been her parents', and the old chest of drawers with the scuff marks at the bottom, from where her tiny feet had kicked it when she'd been a toddler. She took off her wet clothes and stepped into the warm shower, smiling as she thought about how lovely Tice's concert at the Rose Chalet had been, and how sweet it was that he and Whitney had finally declared their love for each other. She'd much rather think about her friends than the man, albeit a very handsome man, who had come to deliver those legal papers to her a few minutes ago. She appreciated good-looking men just as much as the next woman, but her reaction to this one had been out of the ordinary. Probably, she decided as she dried off and dressed, because he seemed to be the perfect combination of rugged and gentle. His dark hair had curled a little too long over his collar, and every part of him had been big and strong, from his shoulders to his hands. She'd felt as if she could stare into his dark eyes for hours. Anne headed downstairs a few minutes later, wearing a favorite long-sleeved dress of her mother's, to which she'd made a few small alterations to fit her slightly smaller figure. A few half-finished dress designs were strewn across the dining room table. As a dress designer, working at the Rose Chalet kept her very busy, not just with wedding dresses, but also with designs for the bridesmaids and flower girls. She went to the sink to fill her kettle with water to make a cup of tea, but ended up stopping with her hand halfway to the faucet. Gareth Cavendish was still standing out in front of her house in the pouring rain. Had he been there all this time that she'd been getting dry and warm? Why was he still here? She'd made it perfectly clear that he had targeted the wrong person with his legal papers. A faint twinge of pity flashed through her. No doubt he had some monster of a boss who would shout at him, or maybe even fire him for making this mistake. Anne knew how lucky she was to be working with Rose at the chalet. Best friends since childhood, they were always there for one another. Gareth looked utterly miserable. So miserable, in fact, that she pulled a clean dish towel out of a kitchen drawer, then walked back to her front door and poked her head out into the damp night air. "Would you like to come in for tea, Mr. Cavendish?" From under his umbrella, he looked at her as if she'd just asked him if he'd like to take up juggling.
"Excuse me?"
"Would you like to come in and have some tea?" Anne repeated. "You must be very wet and cold by now." He hurried over and left his soaking wet umbrella on the porch. As Anne stepped aside to let him in, he said,
"You really shouldn't let strangers into your home like this."
Anne raised her eyebrows. You've already told me who you are and what you want, she pointed out. I don't think many criminals do that.
But how do you know I am who I say I am?
Gareth countered.
You haven't even asked me for any ID.
Sensing it would make him feel better, she held out a hand. Well then, you'd better show me some ID, hadn't you? After he showed her his license, she said, Come dry off and sit down. She handed him the wildly colored dish towel. You've been standing out there forever. After rubbing the towel over his hair and face, he carefully folded it and put it on a nearby marble tabletop. Then he sat down on the large couch covered in plush deep red velvet. The room was filled with mementos, sketches of designs, piles of books, and all the other comfortable clutter of her life. While she poured his tea, his eyes skimmed over the old-fashioned Singer sewing machine she kept on a small table in the corner. She passed him the cup and saucer, and his hand brushed hers as he took it. His skin was surprisingly warm, despite the cold rain he'd been standing in. He took a sip of the tea, then put it down and took out the envelope again, laying it next to the teapot. Anne worked to fight back a slight tightening in her chest. Honestly, there must be more than one Anne Farley in the world. Or, she supposed out loud, perhaps you've got the wrong name altogether of the person you're looking for.
You sound very certain, Miss Farley.
Call me Anne, she said with a smile, ignoring the envelope that Gareth was pushing closer toward her.
Okay then, Anne, can I ask why you're so convinced this has nothing to do with you?
Because my mother and father loved one another. I don't just mean that the way that some people sometimes say it automatically. They truly, deeply loved one another. They even died in one another's arms. When the car crashed... She had to pause for a moment to push away the brutal image. They reached out for each other's hands and held on through to the end. Would they have done that if they weren't so deeply in love?
I'm so sorry about the way they died,
Gareth began, but Anne kept going. I've never been deeply in love with anyone, but I know that if I were, I would never cheat on them. That person would be enough to fill my heart and my life. They'd be everything. There would be no reason to cheat. So you see, this person you're talking about, who cheated on his wife and had a daughter no one knew about, can't be my father. Gareth nodded as though he understood, and she was glad to have finally gotten through to him. But her relief was short-lived as he asked,
Your father was an author who traveled to Oregon many times on book tours, wasn't he?
When she nodded, he said,
Then I'm sorry. I really am. But you are the Anne Farley I'm looking for. This isn't easy, I know. But your father, Edward Farley, had a lover in Ashland. She had a daughter 21 years ago named Jasmine Turner. Jasmine feels that your father unfairly left her out of his last will and testament. She wants what she believes to be her rightful share of the inheritance.
But this is silly, Anne insisted in a calm voice, even though it would be so easy to let herself get angry with this woman, Jasmine, and at Gareth for being so insistent that his client was right. The thing was, the only reason she'd be angry with either of them was if they were right, which they weren't. I don't know how you've come to this conclusion or what your client has told you, but she isn't my father's daughter. I've told you, my mother and father loved each other too much for something like that to have happened. She started to push the papers back across the table, but Gareth held up a hand to stop her.
Anne, it doesn't work like that. You've been served with legal papers now, and you can't just give them back. If the two of you can't resolve things in mediation, then I'm afraid this will have to go to court.
Court? She looked at Gareth for several seconds, reality finally dawning. I'm really being sued?
Yes, he said, with a grave nod tinged with obvious regret. You're really being sued.
Chapter 3 Anne looked as stunned as any of the victims he'd seen in his years on the force, as if she couldn't believe that the world could actually throw something so awful her way. It was understandable, of course, given that he'd just shown up at her door to tell her she had a sister she'd never heard of. He wanted to reach out and tell her that everything would be fine, but they were on opposite sides of the case. His job was to represent Richard Wells's law firm as they worked with Jasmine Turner to get her what she felt was her due. Still, he found himself saying in a gentler voice than he usually used with the people he served, "Sometimes we don't know the people closest to us as well as we think we do." As he said this, he was reminded about his closest friend, Brian, who had betrayed both him and the law. "That must be a hard way to look at the world," she murmured. Gareth shrugged. "It's just the way the world is. Things aren't perfect. People aren't perfect. The best you can hope for is that if you stick to the rules, you'll at least end up doing what's right." He tried, and failed, to stop himself from saying, "Get yourself a good lawyer, Miss Farley. If you're planning to fight this, you're going to need one."
"Fight it?"
"The alternative is that you agree to Jasmine's request and give her the share of your father's estate that she believes she is entitled to. But whatever you eventually decide, you need to attend the mediation. All of the details are in the papers I gave you."
Gareth had explained it simply and calmly, but Anne still looked shocked. "But that's just..." She stood, picking up the teapot to take it into the kitchen. "I'm sorry, you'll have to excuse me. I have work to prepare for tomorrow." Gareth understood this was her way of closing down the discussion. He should go. Should never have been drinking tea with her in the first place. Instead, he said,
"I take it you design dresses."
He gestured to her sketches and sewing machine. He welcomed the shift in Anne's face from wary to passionate as she nodded. "I create wedding dresses for brides at the Rose Chalet." He'd heard of the wedding venue through friends on the force who had planned their weddings over the years and knew it was top-notch.
"From what I can see, it looks like you're very good at it."
"I love what I do." She beamed at him, and it felt as if his heart actually stopped beating as she said, "I've always tried to capture the love that the bride and groom feel for one another. It helps that I saw how deeply in love my parents were." He'd been hoping to segue back onto the topic of the legal proceedings more gently than that, but Anne clearly wasn't going to give him that chance.
"That's why you don't want to accept that these proceedings are real, isn't it?"
"Do you have any idea what it's like to have someone come into your home and accuse your father of..." Her flash of anger left as soon as it had come. "I'm sorry," she said, changing gears. "I imagine you're really a very nice man. In fact, I'm sure you are. It's just... excuse me a moment." She left the room and came back in with something wrapped up in waxed paper. "There's always too much wedding cake, and it's too good to throw away. There was some left over from the wedding at the Rose Chalet, and I thought you might like it. I've wrapped it up so it won't get wet on the way out to your car." Gareth had been thrown out of plenty of places over the years, had even left a biker bar head first when one of his clients didn't like being shown proof that his wife was cheating on him. But he'd never had someone throw him out quite like this before. He took the cake and was heading for the door, when he was strangely compelled to put out his hand and say,
"Despite the circumstances, it was good meeting you, Anne."
"You too." Her hug took him by surprise, so that for a moment or two he could only stand there. He hadn't run into many people who hugged rather than shaking hands, especially in a situation like this. And as her delicate curves pressed against him,
It was all he could do to hang on to his professionalism, standing perfectly still until she pulled back. "Goodbye, Gareth," she said softly but firmly. He walked out to his car and climbed in, trying to make sense of everything that had just happened. He didn't think he'd met anyone with quite such a positive outlook on life before, almost determinedly so. But could anyone really believe there wasn't even the slightest chance that one of their parents had cheated at some point? Gareth returned to his apartment, a luxurious space with views out over the bay. His modern furniture had been picked out for him by an interior designer, because the thought of picking it out by himself hadn't seemed at all appealing. While he was on the force, he'd had a steady paycheck that could easily cover his monthly payments. Now, however, his income was dependent on the quality and frequency of the cases he was able to take on. He'd thought the Farley case would give him and his assistant, Margaret, some breathing room, but it hadn't turned out to be nearly as straightforward as he'd hoped. Not now that he'd met Anne Farley. Gareth was taking off his jacket when he realized there was something in one of the outside pockets. He unfolded the envelope full of legal papers from his pocket, with as much wonder as if it had been a rabbit pulled from a hat. How had she... The hug. Despite himself, Gareth smiled. Chapter 4 Anne arrived at the Rose Chalet early the next day with her sketchbook, fabric samples, and a beautifully organized photo album of wedding dresses she'd designed over the past 5 years. She was very much looking forward to working with Felicity Andrews from San Francisco Magazine to help create the perfect wedding for her. Rose and RJ were in the chalet's main room, cleaning up the mess left from Tice's concert. RJ was working to take down the lighting rig, while Rose mopped the dance floor. The chalet's regular cleaning crew had already mopped, but Rose was never satisfied until everything gleamed. Always elegant, this morning the chalet's owner had tossed her suit jacket over a chair and rolled up her shirt sleeves. She'd tied her auburn hair back, which Anne thought showed off her friend's beautiful cheekbones and deep green eyes perfectly. Anne had always been impressed with how well Rose and RJ worked together, as if they'd synchronized their movements. Not only did they care about one another as friends and co-workers, Anne had always thought that attraction simmered between them as well. Only Rose had a fiancé, and presumably she wouldn't be marrying Donovan if she didn't love him. Perhaps whatever she felt for the Rose Chalet's handyman was just a passing thing, a friendship that had become a little too close. Anne had tried to ask Rose that question late one night, but when her friend had turned white and pressed her lips firmly together, Anne had immediately laughed off her question as if it were a joke, and then changed the subject. "Need a hand?" Rose looked up from her mop and smiled. "Hi, Anne. Perfect timing. With Phoebe and Tice's hours shifting a bit lately, we could use the extra help." As Anne picked up a garbage bag, she was struck not by the fact that their little family at the Rose Chalet was getting smaller day by day, but by the wonderful relationships that had developed over the past few months. First, Julie had fallen in love with Andrew, then Phoebe and Patrick had found a love match, and now Tice and Whitney were together. Anne had never had that kind of luck when it came to love. She dated, of course, and most of the men had been perfectly nice. But romance should be a lot more than just nice, shouldn't it? One day, she told herself, she'd find a love as pure and wonderful as her parents had had. "Will the whole crew be working on Felicity Andrews' wedding, Rose?" Her friend stopped mopping for a moment. "Phoebe will be back from Chicago just in time to come in and do the flowers. Julie and Andrew have agreed to handle the catering, and Tice has arranged for another band director to take over temporarily while he's on vacation in Colorado with Whitney. She sighed. I'm sure it will go well, but I do wish we had everyone here for the event.
We'll find a way to make it work, RJ assured her.
I hope you're right, Rose said. San Francisco Magazine is big. If Felicity doesn't like what we do for her wedding, then it could really hurt the business. But if she likes it...
She'll love it, RJ insisted. Right, Anne?
Of course she will. Anne smiled reassuringly at her friend, even though it was harder than usual to stay positive and cheerful. Given what had happened last night with Gareth and those papers he'd tried to give her. We're going to knock Felicity's Jimmy Choo heels off. 30 minutes later, when RJ had finished with the lighting rig and had left the sparkling clean building, Rose asked, Are you okay, Anne? You don't seem quite like yourself this morning. Oh, I'm fine, Anne said quickly, but her accompanying smile didn't quite reach her eyes. Anne, it's me, Rose said gently. I've known you since we were kids. Since Mrs. McCluskey's class at school, Anne reminisced. Do you remember that boy who always used to... Rose shook her head. Don't change the subject. I know when there's something going on with you. Do you want to talk about it? No. She definitely didn't want to talk about it. Or give the whole crazy story any credence at all. But she also knew that Rose wouldn't let it go until she came as clean as the shining floors, because that was what best friends did for each other. Last night, when I got home, there was a man waiting outside my house in the rain. Rose's eyes widened with alarm. Are you okay? Did you call the police? Don't worry, Anne quickly reassured her. He practically is the police, and besides, he was a perfect gentleman. Cute, too. I'm confused, Rose said, her expression mirroring her words. What did he want? He's a private detective, and he had some silly story about... Well, you wouldn't believe me if I told you. Try me. Anne forced herself to keep smiling in an attempt to treat last night's situation like the absurd mistake that it was. He says my father had a secret daughter from an affair he had over 20 years ago, and that she's going to sue me for her share of what my parents left me. When Rose's eyes widened, Anne said, I told you that you wouldn't believe it. He tried to serve me with court papers. And when I told him he'd obviously made a mistake, he just kept standing outside in the rain. She paused before adding, I felt so sorry for him that I invited him in. Rose still looked more than a little alarmed as she asked, What happened then? I poured him tea, he tried to serve me the papers again, and then he left with a piece of cake. Cake? Rose asked, with the same worried frown she'd been wearing since they'd started talking. He served you with papers? Oh, no, I put them in his jacket pocket when he left. You did what? By now, Rose looked a lot more than worried. In fact, Anne hadn't seen her looking like this since the time she'd found those 3 Australian backpackers sleeping in her garden shed. Anne, you can't do that. But I did. But you can't. This time, Anne was the one frowning. That's exactly what Gareth said. Gareth? The detective, Gareth Cavendish. Despite his reasons for showing up at her front door last night, Anne smiled at the thought of him. He really was pretty cute. Rose had pulled out her phone by then and was scrolling through her contacts. I don't care how cute he is, not when he's acting for someone who's suing you. We need to find you a lawyer. Anne put her hand on her friend's arm. This is a mistake, Rose. My father didn't do this. He couldn't have. Rose momentarily looked up from her phone to put an arm around her friend. I know how hard this is. But do you think someone would go to the trouble and expense of suing you if they didn't think they had a reasonable case? But that's... Anne could feel the abyss opening up in the pit of her stomach, but she forced herself to keep smiling. All her life, her smile had been her armor. As long as she kept smiling, nothing could really be that bad. "I'm on your side," Rose assured her. "But you really need to..." She was interrupted by the bell at the front door. "That must be Felicity Andrews," Anne said, a wave of relief flooding through her. She hadn't ever been quite so grateful for the arrival of a client. "We shouldn't keep her waiting." Rose had never left a client waiting a day in her life. But for once, she looked conflicted. Finally, she said, "Okay, let's go give the publisher of San Francisco's biggest magazine the wedding she deserves." Chapter 5. "Tell me what happened again," Garrett's assistant, Margaret, requested. The slightly water-stained envelope of legal papers sat on her desk between her computer and the picture of her four children. "I want to be sure I've got this straight." For 15 years, they had worked together at the precinct. When he'd left, she'd had enough faith in his ability to succeed as a private investigator to come with him. He couldn't let her down.
"Why do I get the feeling that you're enjoying this?"
"Enjoying it?" Margaret shook her head, but she did smile just a little. "I'm just trying to work out how it is that Gareth Cavendish, the toughest PI this side of anywhere, managed to get himself thrown out of a house by a woman who designs wedding dresses for a living."
"It wasn't like that," Gareth insisted.
"Come on, there has to be some kind of reason why the papers you needed to serve Anne Farley are on my desk rather than with her."
"That part's easy. She slipped them into my jacket pocket when I left."
He didn't think it was wise to mention the fact that Anne Farley had been hugging him at the time. Nor did he plan on admitting just how much time he'd spent thinking about her since first meeting her last night. "Why didn't you drive straight back over there to make her take them?" Margaret looked concerned. "Gareth, this isn't like you."
"There's something..."
He wasn't exactly sure how to put it.
"Different about Anne."
Margaret raised one eyebrow into a high arch.
"Anne?"
He quickly backpedaled.
"Miss Farley."
On a sigh, his assistant asked,
"Different how?"
How could he tell her what it had been like watching Anne walking through the rain, smiling as she enjoyed every moment of it? And how could he possibly explain that for the first time since coming to terms with his ex-partner's lies, something had pushed through the shields Gareth had put up around himself? Finally, he said,
"She's a nice woman."
"Nice." Margaret's echo came at the same time that she tapped her pencil on the desk in the way she did when she was thinking about how to solve a problem. "Well, regardless of how nice she is, we need to deal with this before Richard Wells hears about it. He could decide you aren't the man for the job to deal with little Miss Reverse Pickpocket."
"Don't call her that, Margaret."
He felt strangely protective of the woman he'd met less than 24 hours ago.
"It's clear that this situation comes as a complete surprise to her. It can't be easy to find out that the father she loved and trusted wasn't so trustworthy and lovable after all."
"This is a legal case," Margaret pointed out. "You know what you have to do, even if it isn't what you'd like to do. I know the papers have been served whether or not she keeps them, but I can guarantee that Richard won't be at all happy if he learns about her sticking them back in your pocket. You need to give them back to her, and make sure she keeps them this time." When he didn't immediately agree, her expression softened. "You know I love you like a son, don't you? And that I left the precinct with you because I believe you're the best detective in this city?"
"I know."
And he did. He also knew her well enough to brace for what was about to come next. "I want you to succeed. I want us to succeed. And I know we will. But this case is a big part of building the foundation for our success. So you need to think about how bad you want it, and what you're willing to do about it." She paused before adding, "I will accept and go along with whatever decision you make. Just promise me you'll actually think this situation through." Gareth knew Margaret was right. Only, at the same time, he knew how much this would hurt Anne, and just the thought of hurting her was enough to make his chest squeeze tight. And yet, if he didn't get her to take this seriously and attend the mediation, the case would end up in court. He barely knew her, but he imagined the last thing Anne would want was a public discussion of her father's infidelities. Margaret waited until he was almost at the door to his office before saying, "One other thing. Brian called. I told him that you weren't in, and he said he'd try to call your cell number later." Gareth fought against the twisting in his guts at the mention of his old partner and closest friend.
"Thanks for warning me."
Was Brian finally calling to apologize? And did he really think that an apology would fix things? He deliberately falsified reports so that his girlfriend's kid wouldn't be part of a drug possession case. As soon as Gareth had found out, he'd insisted that Brian come clean. Rules were rules, after all, especially for a police officer. But Brian held firm, claiming that the kid deserved another chance in life without a record, and that he was going to give it to him. Deciding whether or not to turn in his friend had been the most difficult decision in Gareth's career. But, in the end, he hadn't been able to do it. He couldn't ruin his friend's life like that. All he could hope was that his old friend would do the right thing, or leave the job of his own free will. When Brian did neither of those things, Gareth knew he was the one who had to go. And that was why he had to go serve these papers to Anne Farley again, and make sure she attended the mediation. Because however beautiful and sweet Anne was, he owed his best to his client, to Margaret, and to himself, too. And in a strange kind of way, he owed it to Anne. Because if he could get her into mediation, maybe he could help keep the case from becoming even uglier. Heading back into Margaret's office, he picked the water-stained envelope off her desk and said, "I need the address for the Rose Chalet." The Rose Chalet was, he had to admit 20 minutes later, a very nice spot by the bay, surrounded by beautiful gardens. Walking through the main gate, he quickly found an elegant redhead talking to a handyman.
"You're really telling me that you don't think you should have worn overalls to mop the floor this morning?" the man asked.
The woman looked slightly shocked. "And have Felicity arrive early and see me like that?"
"I don't think she'd have minded. She didn't mind how I'm dressed, did she?"
"You and I both know that's because she was checking you out, even though she's getting married here soon. I don't think I'd get the same reaction."
"I don't know," the man replied. "I think you look good no matter what you wear."
Just then, the woman saw Gareth. She looked a little flushed, and no wonder the way the two of them were flirting. "Hello," she said. "I'm Rose. Can I help you?" He quickly put two and two together and realized this was Rose from the Rose Chalet.
"I'm looking for Anne Farley. Is she here?"
"What's this about?" Rose asked him, a heavy note of suspicion in her voice. Clearly, she was very protective of her colleague. Gareth was glad. Even from the short time he'd spent with Anne, he knew she deserved good friends who would look out for her. Hopefully, her friends would prove more loyal than his had. Rather than explain the situation to her, he simply said,
"I was just hoping to catch her here."
Rose gazed at him for a long while, and he felt as if she was assessing him top to bottom, inside and out. Finally, she said, "Sorry, you've missed her. I believe she headed home a half hour ago." Gareth nodded his thanks, then headed back toward his car. Odds were, he was going to spend quite a bit of time standing outside Anne's house until she finally emerged again. Good thing it had finally stopped raining. Chapter 6 Anne looked at the boxes spread out on the floor in front of her, trying to remember which one held the bolt of fabric her parents had brought back from a trip to India many, many years ago. It would be perfect for Felicity Andrews' wedding dress. Assuming, of course, that she could find anything at all in the huge stack of boxes. There were mementos from her father's book-signing trips, books that they hadn't had enough shelves for, newspaper cuttings, even old clothes that still had some wear in them. Too many happy memories for Anne to have thrown away. Fortunately, the meeting with Felicity Andrews at the Rose Chalet had gone perfectly, Anne thought, as she rooted through yet another box and found a collection of porcelain dolls she'd completely forgotten about. She set the box aside with plans to study the Victorian-era dresses worn by the dolls more closely in the following weeks. Anne always asked her brides to talk about their fiancés, because it was the best way for her to understand the tone of the dress they were looking for, whether sweet or gentle, or in Felicity Andrews' case, fiercely passionate. Sitting with Felicity that afternoon and hearing her talk about how deeply her passion and love ran for her fiancé had immediately sent Anne's mind drifting to the man she couldn't seem to get out of her head, and wondering just how deep Gareth Cavendish's passions ran. But as nice as it was to think about the handsome private investigator, she needed to focus on the Rose Chalet's most important client to date, especially given that Felicity had been, in large part, responsible for helping Anne regain her usual happy equilibrium that morning. She'd confirmed that her magazine was going to do a special wedding issue, with Anne's creations having a starring role. Even better, upon hearing that Anne still had her mother's wedding dress, Felicity had suggested it would make the perfect centerpiece for the shoot. If only she could find the fabric to make Felicity's dress. If Rose had been there, Anne had no doubt her friend would have systematically inventoried each box and found the fabric within 15 minutes. But every time Anne opened a box, she couldn't help but think back to where the contents had come from. The tiny teddy bear her mother had given her as a baby. The costume jewelry she and her mother had collected at yard sales when she was a little girl, and would wear when they pretended to have tea with the Queen. Nothing, however, affected her quite as much as the collection of love poems her father had written for her mother. As Anne read the poems one by one, she imagined her father's deep voice reading them to her mother as she sat beside him on the love seat. They'd been so perfect together, so happy. Inevitably, her thoughts returned to Gareth, to what he'd claimed was true about her father, and a brief flash of anger flowed through her before she pushed it away. The doorbell rang, and when she went to answer it and saw Gareth standing on the front porch, she felt as if she'd conjured him up out of thin air, simply by thinking of him again and again throughout the day. "We need to talk," he said in that low voice that sent thrill bumps moving across the surface of her arms. "Can I come in?" A part of her had known he'd come back, hadn't she? Especially when she'd slipped the envelope into his pocket as he was leaving. And while she wasn't looking forward to dealing with a legal case, she couldn't deny that on a purely female level, it was very nice to see him again. She'd been attracted to him from the moment she saw him, but she still couldn't quite work out why. Obviously, the incredibly good-looking part helped, but it was more than that. Gareth was nothing like the creative novelist her father had been. Instead, there was something stable about him. Dependable. He promised,
"This won't take too long,"
as she stepped aside to let him in. As he headed through to the living room, he couldn't miss the boxes strewn all over the floor. He raised a questioning eyebrow.
"What's all this?"
"I'm looking for some fabric," Anne said. "I'm sure it's in one of these boxes." She smiled up at him. "I imagine your office is perfectly neat?"
"Mostly."
He gave her a small smile that made her feel tingly all over.
"Thanks to Margaret."
"Margaret?" Anne felt a twinge of something other than tingles flicker through her. It took her a moment to identify it. She was jealous. Of Margaret. Whoever Margaret was.
"She's my office manager," he explained. "Though there are days when she can feel like my boss if I'm not keeping up with my schedule."
Anne smiled. "It can be like that for me sometimes. So many dresses, so little time. And they have to be perfect, don't they? I mean, I couldn't let someone get married in a dress that wasn't perfect." Still, even as she spoke, she was reeling from the emotions another woman's name out of Gareth's mouth had brought up in her. Because she could only be jealous if...
"This sewing machine must have quite a few years on it," Gareth said, as he put one strong hand on her singer.
Anne was struck by the contrast between his tanned masculine fingers and the dainty, faded olive-green machine. "My mother had it when I was a child. I can picture her sitting here every time I use it." Gareth nodded, then said,
"With all these boxes, I thought for a minute."
She couldn't resist moving closer to him as she asked, "What did you think?"
"That you were taking the case seriously enough to look for proof that your father didn't."
"Why would I need to do that?" Yet again, she had to fight like crazy to push away the new rush of anger and frustration. She picked up the love poems. "Would my father have written these if he didn't love my mother? So please, don't start up again with how I have a secret half-sister."
"Believe it or not," he said gently, "I really don't want to do anything to hurt your memories of your parents."
"Then don't. Would you like some tea?" Anne asked it automatically, but she was almost grateful when Gareth shook his head. "My friend Rose seems to think that I should take all this a lot more seriously." Gareth looked at her, staring straight into her eyes. His gaze was so intense.
"I met her earlier today when I went by the Rose Chalet. She seems like a good friend."
"She is. In fact, Rose is the closest thing I have to a sister," she added pointedly. "Which is why I'd really appreciate it if you'd please tell this woman to withdraw her case." But Gareth only shook his head.
"If you really believe Jasmine Turner isn't your sister, then you should prove it before this case gets out of hand."
"Gets out of hand how?" Anne asked. She had visions of bailiffs showing up at the front door to take everything away from her. They couldn't do that. Could they? The world had to be fairer than that. Gareth reached out as if he would take her hand. But then, at the last second, he put his hand in his pocket instead.
"Do you want all of this in the public eye? Because if you don't come to the mediation, that's what will happen."
Anne froze at that thought. The idea of someone dragging her parents' name through the press like that was almost too much to bear. "Are you saying you'd tell reporters?" Anne asked incredulously. "You wouldn't really do something like that, would you?"
"No, I wouldn't do that to you. But if this goes to trial, people will find out. Edward Farley wasn't the biggest author in the world, but he was big enough that people will be interested, and we won't be able to stop that."
As he spoke, Anne tried desperately to make sense of the way her life had turned upside down in the past 24 hours.
"Even though you're certain that your father couldn't have done this, you should still go to the mediation, preferably with your own lawyer. I'll be right outside, Anne, I promise. It will just be you, your lawyer, Jasmine, her lawyer, and a professional mediator. Go there and prove your case. Show Jasmine and the mediator that you're right. Please, at least talk to them. It's the best thing to do. Part of her knew that Gareth was right. Going to this meeting would be the only way to deal with the situation before it ruined her father's reputation. Yet it seemed so unfair that someone could just show up and start questioning his marriage and behavior. Just as unfair as her parents' sudden deaths had been. They shouldn't have been snatched away like that. And now, she thought, as her eyes filled up with tears, someone was trying to take away her memories of them, too. Chapter 7 Gareth's gut squeezed tight as Anne started crying. Another investigator might have tried to ignore the pain of this sweet, funny, beautiful woman, but he couldn't do it. Instead, he reached out to try to soothe her by putting a comforting arm around her. He honestly expected her to flinch at his touch. He was the enemy, after all. So when she surprised him, yet again, by putting her head on his shoulder and sinking down onto the couch with him while she cried, he couldn't stop himself thinking about how perfect it felt to hold her like this. "It's going to be all right," he promised. She turned her face to his so that he was looking into the depths of those perfectly blue eyes, close enough that their lips were just a few inches apart. "Gareth," she said, his name barely more than a whisper. He had dated plenty of beautiful, intelligent, talented women, yet not one of them had made him feel the way Anne was making him feel right now. What was more, not one of them had made him want to open up to them, to let them into the parts of himself that he kept hidden. Maybe it was because, even after having known her only a day, he sensed that Anne would never take advantage of him in any way. So when she started to close the rest of the distance between them, her lips moving closer slowly, almost imperceptibly, Gareth wanted to pretend that he couldn't see it coming, so that he could stay there and let this wonderful woman kiss him. But he couldn't. Not when she was on the other side of a case from him. The rules for a situation like this were clear, and he'd always lived his life strictly by the rules. Pulling back, taking his arms from around her, and standing up was one of the most difficult things he'd ever done. But he did it anyway. "I need to give you these again." He took the envelope of legal papers out of his pocket and handed them to her. Gareth's gut twisted yet again at the clear disappointment and hurt on Anne's face as she stood. He wished he could confess that he'd been drawn to her from the moment he first saw her, and that he wanted her more than he'd ever wanted any other woman. Only, actually saying either one of those things would be completely unprofessional, and totally against the rules. Helping her navigate the legal case as cleanly as possible was all he could do. "Gareth, did I do something wrong?" "No, of course you didn't," he said softly. "Please promise me that I'll see you at the mediation tomorrow." Anne stared at him for a long moment before finally nodding. "All right, I'll go. But I'm not going to bring a lawyer. I'm sure I can explain everything myself. Are you sure you won't stay, though? For tea, or..." It would have been so easy to say yes. So easy, and with Anne, so perfect. But he couldn't break the rules like that. Not even for her. "I have to get back to the office." It was hard keeping things flat and professional, and heading for her front door as if nothing was wrong. He managed to walk all the way out to his car without looking back, but he risked a glance in the rear-view mirror, and saw Anne wave goodbye, as if she'd had a friendly visit from an old acquaintance. Of course, they'd almost become a lot more than that. He couldn't stop thinking of what it might have been like to close that distance between them,
and taste the sweet softness of her lips rather than pulling away.
"Stop it," he told himself aloud. "It's not going to happen. It can't happen." Gareth put his Jaguar in gear and got out of there, because every moment he spent looking at her meant another one he had to fight not to go back into the house and finish what they'd nearly started on the sofa.
"Did you do it?"
Margaret asked when he walked back into his office. Gareth nodded, even as his gut twisted at the memory of Anne's tears.
"I'm proud of you," she said.
And then, "There's a visitor waiting in your office, but I need to talk to you about that first, because..." Gareth wasn't in the mood to wait. Dealing with a new client was exactly what he needed. It was the only way he'd managed to get thoughts of Anne out of his head. He pushed his office door open and stepped inside.
"I'm sorry to have kept you waiting, Miss..." "Kira, what are you doing here?"
Brian's girlfriend stood up and smiled at him.
"Gareth, it's good to see you again."
Her voice was warm despite all that had happened 6 months ago.
"Brian said you wouldn't want to see me and that you would be angry with me."
"It's not you I'm angry with."
"Your secretary was very protective. She didn't want to let me wait for you."
Kira shook her head.
"All this anger. Can't we get past it? You and Brian used to be inseparable."
"That was before he broke the rules," Gareth said.
"Yes," she admitted, "he broke a few rules. But he loves me and my son, Bobby, and he only wants what's best for us. In my experience, as long as no one gets hurt, doesn't love matter the most?"
"Rules matter," Gareth insisted. "If they don't, there's chaos, and everything breaks down."
Brian's girlfriend stepped back from him.
"I'm not here to argue with you. I'm here to give you an invitation."
Gareth was instantly wary.
"What kind of invitation?"
"Brian and I are getting married. We're having an engagement party later this week, and we want you to be there. Brian hasn't said it, but I know it's what he wants, and that he's hoping the two of you will be able to put the past behind you. Please say you'll at least think about it."
She put the invitation on his desk and walked out of his office. Gareth stared at the thick cream paper, wondering how Kira could possibly think that he'd want to go to their engagement party, or that he'd be okay with spending time with Brian again, when his friend couldn't be trusted to tell the truth anymore. And did he and his girlfriend really think that Gareth could put aside everything he stood for, all of his convictions, just like that, for love? Chapter 8. As Anne picked out her outfit for work the next day, she caught herself sighing for what had to be the dozenth time. What was wrong with her? Moping around was so negative, and that wasn't the kind of person she wanted to be. Yet there was something about the thought of what had happened with Gareth yesterday, the almost kiss that had kept her up half the night replaying it over and over, that was profoundly frustrating. So much so that yet another sigh slipped by her normally optimistic defenses. In the past few months, she'd seen her friend Phoebe become far less cynical about the world, thanks to her relationship with Patrick Knight. Anne really hoped that kind of thing didn't work in reverse, too. It was just that moment yesterday, when Gareth's mouth had been only inches from hers, and his arms had been around her. Had been so good. More than that, it had felt right. She'd spent so many years looking around for Mr. Right, even letting Phoebe and Tice talk her into occasionally dating one of their friends. But with everything Anne had seen of her parents' marriage, it had just seemed so obvious that she would know when the right person came along. Unfortunately, none of the men she dated had ever come close. Heading downstairs to get breakfast, she put a pot on for tea. While the water boiled, she got a box of cereal out of the pantry and reflected that when she'd been in Gareth's arms on her couch, she could have sworn there was something special between them, an impossible, perfect connection that she'd felt nothing could break. Until he had broken it by pulling back from her. If they had that kind of connection, then surely he should have felt it too. Surely the thing about perfect love was that it should be perfect, not something that people got confused over, or pulled back from, or... She looked down and saw that she was pouring tea into her cereal bowl. Damn it! Anne paused, more than a little horrified with herself for the way she was behaving this morning. Which brought her to something else she couldn't make sense of. Her parents had been such perfect, happy, loving counterparts to each other, whereas Gareth was at the heart of a legal process that was slowly tearing Anne apart. Didn't that mean he couldn't possibly be right for her? And yet, Anne still wished he had closed that gap between them and kissed her yesterday. Abandoning her breakfast, she walked back over to the pile of boxes still spread out all over her living room floor. On top of one of the boxes was a picture of her mother and father on their wedding day. Her mother looked radiant in her wedding dress, like a princess. Her father was incredibly handsome in his suit. Felicity Andrews and San Francisco Magazine were expecting to use her mother's wedding dress for the photo shoot. Fortunately, it hadn't taken Anne long to find the dress. She'd gotten it out of its box many times over the years to stare at, while she waited for inspiration to hit. Just thinking of the love her parents had had was always enough to fuel her creative juices. Anne held the gown up to the light with a critical eye, looking at it the way she would a dress ready to be fitted to a bride. It was beautiful, but there was still a lot of work to do. The beading around the edges had faded over time, and some of the stitching had come loose. It would all need to be redone by hand. She ran the silk of the dress through her fingers, feeling the beading as she went. Remembering her mother saying the beads had been a special gift from her father for the dress, she wondered if they had picked out the beads together, or had her father brought them home from one of his book tours. He had gone on a lot of trips without her and her mother, hadn't he? On impulse, she pulled out her cell phone and dialed Rose. "Hi, Anne," Rose said, picking up the phone after the first ring. "How are you today?"
"Wonderful,"
Anne said automatically, because, well, why wouldn't she say it?
"I'm just starting to work on my mother's dress for the photo shoot."
"The magazine feature is going to be a big deal," Rose said. "It should attract a lot of attention, for you especially."
"That would be nice," Anne said. "Plus, it means I get a chance to go through all of my parents' old things."
"Ah," Rose said. "The boxes." "The boxes," Anne agreed, because Rose liked to tease her about the number of them taking up odd corners and closets. Keeping the phone pressed to her ear, she got out the sewing box Rose had given her 1 year as a birthday present, and started carefully using a needle to unpick the thread of the beading where it was worn. As she worked, she said,
"My mother was always sewing, wasn't she?"
Anne thought back to her mother greeting the two friends after school with milk and cookies, and then sitting with them to gossip about the goings-on at school, while she deftly worked at beading with her nimble fingers. "Yes, I got the sense she loved it, but it was also a way for her to keep busy," Rose said, "especially when your father wasn't there." That was true. Her father had often been away, and it would be so quiet with just the two of them there together. "Lots of people spend time apart, though," Anne pointed out. "Look at Tice and Whitney." "Yes, but as soon as Whitney graduates from vet school, they're planning to live together full-time."
"What about Phoebe and Patrick?"
"They go back and forth between San Francisco and Chicago so often, I never know if I'm going to have a florist or not from one day to the next," Rose said.
"But they're deeply in love, aren't they? Just like you and Donovan. I mean, you don't always see him every day because he's so busy with work.
but you are committed to spending the rest of your lives together.
That's the plan, Rose said lightly. Then her voice turned a little more serious. Is this a roundabout way of talking about what happened yesterday with the investigator?
No. I'm just saying that even if my father wasn't at home all the time, it didn't mean there was anything wrong.
No, of course not, Rose replied. Your father had to tour the country for his work.
Exactly.
Anne was suddenly hit with a vivid picture of the way her mother would stand looking out the window after the taxi had left to take her father to the airport again. She tried to keep such a brave face on, but her sorrow had been palpable.
I know Mom seemed so lonely sometimes, but that just shows how much they loved one another, doesn't it? That they cared about each other so much, it hurt every time they were apart. Is it like that with you and Donovan?
I see him practically every day. In fact, I'm going to see him in a minute.
Darn it, you should have told me I wasn't calling it a good time.
Anne, I have all the time in the world for you. And if you need to talk...
Say hello to Donovan for me. I'd better get back to work, she said, as she put down the phone and looked back at her mother's dress.
It was actually romantic when she thought about it, the way her mother had all but counted the moments until the man she loved returned from the road. Thinking about it any other way, well, that idea just hurt too much. So Anne threaded a needle instead, getting to work on the beating. It was one of those jobs that wasn't technically difficult, but it did require concentration and patience. All the images she had of her parents' wedding came from photographs and her vivid imagination, but that didn't stop her from feeling their love for each other every time she touched the dress. All she needed to do now was... Ow! She sucked her finger until it stopped hurting, and when she was sure she wasn't going to bleed all over the dress, she told herself to concentrate as she got back to work on the beading. It was proving trickier than expected, because too much force would tear the silk, while not enough wouldn't get the job done. Anne squinted closely at the fabric as she worked, trying not to think about Gareth, or the case, or... a snag. Somehow she'd snagged some of the delicate fabric on the dress. If she wasn't more careful, it could turn into a full-fledged tear. Finally accepting that she was all thumbs today, right when she couldn't afford to be, she carefully put aside her mother's dress, determined not to do any more damage. What was wrong with her? But as she glanced at her watch, the answer was painfully obvious. The mediation was due to start in 15 minutes. She'd been trying to ignore it all morning, thinking about her parents, the dress, talking to Rose. Anything but the thought of sitting opposite a woman claiming to be her sister, and trying to be polite while a stranger made accusations about her father. Yet Gareth had been clear that he thought this was the only way to get the whole crazy mess straightened out before it went any further, and she'd promised him that she would go. Anne found her first real smile of the day as she thought about seeing Gareth again. He'd said that he wouldn't go inside the meeting room itself, but she could imagine him standing outside, waiting for them to sort this whole mess out. He did look so good standing outside places, after all. And afterward, when the nonsense about her father was resolved, well, Anne could easily imagine laughing with him over it all. And then maybe, just maybe, they could revisit the moment they'd had yesterday. Only without the pulling away at the last minute part, of course. And then, once everything was neatly back in place in her life, she would come home and restore her mother's wedding dress to its original glory. Chapter 9. Anne had expected a courtroom, or at least a judge presiding over it, but not a small conference room in the courthouse, with Gareth standing outside. He looked wonderful in another of those oh-so-formal suits of his that made her want to greet him with a hug just to rumple him up a little bit.
A young woman stood beside him, presumably Jasmine Turner. She was blonde with blue eyes, but as far as Anne was concerned, their similarities stopped there, especially when she looked into Jasmine's eyes, which had a hard glint to them that Anne had never seen before, not in her father's eyes or her own. Still, Anne was going to do her best to look for the good in Jasmine Turner. After all, disliking someone at first sight just wasn't in her DNA. People almost always turned out to be nicer than you might think when you gave them a chance.
"Hello, Anne," Gareth said. "This is Jasmine Turner and Richard Wells, Jasmine's lawyer."
"She's late," Jasmine snapped. "The mediator is inside already."
"Actually, I'm in the middle of a very important project, and I've come here on very short notice. I'd like to know how long this will take," Anne said. "I have to rework the beading on an entire dress, and..."
"It will go quicker if you stop talking about dresses," Jasmine snapped.
The gray-haired lawyer opened the door to the mediation room.
"Why don't we get started?" he said, trying to diffuse the situation.
Anne nodded. The sooner they did this, the sooner she could show everyone just how delusional they all were.
"Whenever you're ready."
"That would have been about 5 minutes ago," Jasmine replied, rolling her eyes.
Gareth interrupted in a conciliatory tone.
"Remember, the idea here today is to talk things through, to see if we can come to an amicable agreement about what should happen next."
Anne wanted to kiss Gareth for reminding them all to remain calm and reasonable. The three of them went into the conference room, leaving Gareth behind. Seated at the head of a large conference table was a woman wearing a gray business suit. She peered at them over the rims of her glasses. Jasmine and Richard headed for one side of the table, while Anne went to the opposite side automatically. She did her best to maintain her usual happy demeanor, smiling at the mediator as she sat down.
"You must be Jasmine Turner and Anne Farley," the mediator said, addressing them rather than the lawyer. "I'm Rebecca Williams, and I'll be mediating this discussion. The aim here today is to see if we can't prevent the case between the two of you from going to court. I'd like this to be an open and polite discussion. I know that can be challenging in difficult circumstances, but I won't allow this meeting to degenerate into an argument. You'll each have the chance to say everything you need to say, but the price of that is that you have to let the other person speak, too." She turned to focus on Jasmine. "Now, I understand that Ms. Turner is asking for half the estate of Edward Farley."
"I am," Jasmine said. "It's what I should have received years ago. I'm only asking for what I deserve."
The mediator turned to Anne. "And you, Miss Farley, are resisting this claim because..."
"Because this is nonsense," Anne said. "I'm sorry, but my father would never have cheated on my mother. So there's no way he could have had an entire other family."
"Yes, there is," Jasmine insisted.
The mediator held up her hand. "Miss Turner, it would be best if you could please tell us why you believe Edward Farley to be your father." Richard Wells opened the file folder he'd brought in and slid it in front of his client. "While my mother raised me by herself, there was a man who came to the house sometimes when I was a little girl. I didn't know who he was, but when I got older, I started asking about my father. I couldn't help wondering if that man was him. Finally, a few months ago, my mother gave me the name of my biological father. His name is Edward Farley."
"Maybe," Anne said, trying to be reasonable, "your mother made up a name to get you to stop asking."
"My mother wouldn't do that."
"And my father wouldn't have had a relationship with someone other than my mother," Anne countered. "He loved her too much."
"We're here to discuss the facts of a case," Ms. Williams reminded them, "not to speculate about a motive." Jasmine nodded.
"All right. It's a fact that I saw Edward Farley's photograph in a newspaper. It's a fact that I recognized him as the man who used to come to the house when I was a little girl. And it's a fact that when I confronted my mother, she ended up admitting that he is my father."
Is your mother here so that we can confirm that? Ms. Williams asked. Jasmine looked slightly uncomfortable, shifting in her chair.
She said she didn't want to be part of all this.
Anne smiled to herself. If this woman's own mother didn't want anything to do with her case, then why would anyone else believe what she said?
Clearly, if your mother isn't prepared to go along with this, Anne said, you must have made a mistake. Maybe there's someone who could actually help you find your real father. Someone like Gareth?
Jasmine rolled her eyes.
He's the one who helped us put together the rest of the story. You saw this man you think might have been your father, what, a couple of times? Closer to a dozen. We've pieced together the dates he visited with the dates of the affair he had with my mother. They coincide with dates Edward Farley was on book signing tours. Are you sure you didn't take a bunch of dates my father was on tour and fit your memories around them? Anne asked. Because if you really wanted him to be your father...
He is my father! Jasmine practically spat at her. Why don't we hear about the dates? Ms. Williams interrupted. Then we can go from there. Jasmine gripped her papers tightly as she started to read from her list. Anne wasn't sure what reading the dates would do to help their situation. After all, she had been just a girl at the time, so she hadn't kept track of the exact dates of her father's tours. Until, suddenly, one leapt out at her.
Did you just say May 17th?
She laughed out loud, because she simply couldn't help it.
It was over. It was finally over.
What's so funny? Jasmine demanded. Do you think this is a joke? Ms. Williams intervened. Ms. Farley, why don't you tell us what's so important about May 17th?
Anne smiled. It's my birthday. Do you really think that my father, that anyone's father, would spend his daughter's birthday with some other family? This is ridiculous.
Jasmine stood, and her lawyer spoke up.
It seems that we made a mistake in trying to resolve this situation with mediation. Thank you for your time, Ms. Williams.
Jasmine didn't so much as acknowledge Anne as she stalked from the room. Richard Wells hurried out after his client. Anne didn't care about either of them as she thanked the mediator and practically bounced her way out of the room to where Gareth was still standing by the door. He looked at her carefully.
How did it go?
Anne beamed at him.
I'm glad you talked me into coming today.
You are?
Gareth sounded more than a little surprised.
Yes, I am.
Anne reached out to hug him.
Thank you. If I hadn't come, then it wouldn't be over.
Gareth raised an eyebrow.
Over? You and Jasmine agreed to a settlement that quickly? I'm surprised Richard didn't say something about it when we left. And he didn't look particularly happy, either.
No, we didn't agree to a settlement. I simply explained to her why she couldn't possibly be my sister. Even her own mother wasn't prepared to stand up for her. So what does that tell you?
Anne, he said slowly, I'm not sure this case will be quite so easy to wrap up. Why don't you tell me everything that happened?
Must I? Anne asked. I just want to take this whole stupid mess and put it behind me so that I can get on with my life.
I'd feel a lot happier if you did tell me.
Anne thought for a second or two. Strictly speaking, she should probably be getting home to work on Felicity Andrews's dress, not to mention her mother's dress. On the other hand, when the alternative was spending more time with Gareth, it wasn't exactly a difficult choice. Especially when she remembered that moment yesterday, when they'd been so close to one another.
Okay, she agreed. I'll tell you everything, but only if you let me tell you over lunch.
Chapter 10 Gareth should have said no, of course. Private detectives didn't go to lunch with the people on the other side of the case they were handling. Not unless they were trying to talk them into accepting a settlement. And certainly not because the woman happened to be beautiful and wonderful and impossible to get through to. So how did he come to be sitting across from Anne in a small restaurant, with views out toward the Golden Gate Bridge, looking into her eyes? Yes, he needed to find out what had happened in the mediation. But the real reason he was here was that he'd been so swept up in Anne from the first moment he'd set eyes on her walking in the rain that it had been impossible to say no. Still, he had to try to keep some measure of professionalism. "Now will you tell me how things went in the mediation?" Anne made a little face.
"For just a few more moments, could we pretend we're simply out enjoying a nice lunch together?"
Gareth didn't need to pretend to enjoy himself around Anne. And, surprisingly, he found he wasn't quite ready to ruin the moment by pressing her for more details about the case.
"So, you've lived in San Francisco all your life?"
Strictly speaking, he knew the answer because he'd done his research for this case. But he just wanted to hear Anne talk. She had a beautiful voice, so full of hope and optimism. He could listen to her talk all day. Besides, there was something very different about listening to Anne tell her story, rather than studying a list of facts he'd compiled about her. Lists of facts didn't have her infectious enthusiasm, for one. And a list couldn't include all the little details and subtle nuances that made a stranger into a real person.
"Yes, I've lived here all my life, in the same house I live in now. What about you?"
"I have a place not that far from here. I moved to the city because there was a good job available with the police here. Before I went solo."
She paused, as if to digest that new piece of information, before saying,
"So you must know all the interesting spots in the city."
How, he wondered, had she innately known that he didn't want to talk about his reasons for leaving the force?
"Actually, apart from my traveling around for my cases, I pretty much stay in my neighborhood."
"You've really never gone looking for all the neat little areas in the city?"
Anne asked, sounding surprised, as if she couldn't believe that everybody didn't spend their days wandering around San Francisco.
"I've been busy building my own business," he said.
But even he could hear it as the lame excuse it was. Anne shook her head with a smile, reached out across the table to take his hands in hers.
"There are so many wonderful things in this city. Anywhere, if you just look. Come with me."
She stood up, still holding on to his hands. Her hands were small and should have felt delicate, but there was an unexpected strength to them.
"Where are we going?" Gareth asked. "Don't you want to eat lunch?"
"Yes, we'll do that later."
She grinned at him.
"Right now, I'm going to show you what you've been missing out on."
He couldn't miss the sweet challenge in her sparkling eyes as she pulled him toward the door with obvious enthusiasm.
"What do you have to lose?"
Possibly quite a bit, considering he shouldn't even be here with her in the first place. And yet, it was strangely easy to ignore that thought and let Anne pull him from the restaurant.
"Anne, we've just walked past my car."
"The place I'm taking you is close by, and besides, it's a lovely day."
He hadn't really given the quality of the day much thought. He'd been too busy thinking about the mediation, about the case, about Anne. Now, though, he had to admit, it really was a nice day.
"Sure, let's walk."
She threaded her arm through his as they headed down the street.
"It's amazing the things you see if you just take the time to look for them, things you never thought you might see."
"Are you taking me to see the Painted Ladies?"
Gareth asked. He'd driven by the 7 historic, colorful houses several times. Maybe Anne thought he hadn't really looked at them properly before.
"Oh, no, I'm sure you've seen those," Anne said.
The secretive hint to her smile indicated she wasn't about to spoil the surprise by telling him where they were going. She led him into a small park, along garden paths hemmed in by greenery on both sides, so that it felt like a space cut off from the rest of the world, even though they were still just a little way from the restaurant.
"Have you spotted them yet?" she asked.
Spotted what?
Gareth looked around, glancing over flowers and shrubs, a tree or two, and not much else. What did Anne want him to look at? He tried looking again, more carefully this time, slowing down as his eyes scanned the space around him. Finally, he saw something unexpected. Plants were flowing up out of old sneakers, high heels, men's dress shoes, even a few tall boots. They were bedding plants, mostly, but a few larger specimens poked up out of open-backed shoes, allowing the roots to spread.
"It's beautiful, isn't it?" Anne said.
It should have looked like random littering. It should have looked too odd to be beautiful. It should have been pure chaos.
Yet, Gareth had to admit that the flowers made the shoe garden a riot of colors, while the shoes in between blended with those colors. It was strange, but also very beautiful indeed. He found himself smiling as he looked around the place, and considered the thought that someone could have done this.
Who put all this together?
People just come along and plant shoes.
But it should be chaotic, he told her, when he couldn't make sense of it.
Anne smiled. I suppose so, but fortunately it seems to work anyway.
She led the way around another bend in the path, to a spot where there were trays of bedding plants along with soil. Gareth could guess what she intended.
Oh no, no way.
Everyone should do it at least once.
She took off her own shoes without hesitating. They were beautiful heels that matched the dress she was wearing. Gareth guessed that she'd either customized them herself or made the dress to fit the shoes.
You're really going to plant a flower in those shoes?
Of course. Come on, try it. You won't regret it.
He had a moment's hesitation, given how much the shoes he was wearing had cost, yet Gareth found himself bending down to untie them. Together, they chose plants for each of their shoes and then got down to work. Anne planted hers beside his.
There, she said. Doesn't that feel good?
It did. Better than he'd have thought. And as they padded out of the park together, Anne in her bare feet and Gareth in his black dress socks, in that moment he felt as if he could tell her anything. But he really didn't want to talk about the case just then, which really left only one other thing.
Do you remember before, when I mentioned leaving the precinct?
Yes. From your tone of voice, I was wondering if something happened to make you want to leave.
My partner, Brian, met a woman. He fell in love with her.
That doesn't sound like a reason to leave your job.
It wasn't.
Gareth kept walking.
Except she had a kid, and the kid was in trouble. He'd made the kind of friends who didn't think twice about having him transport drugs for them. Brian looked the other way.
No, Gareth thought. He had to tell her the full truth.
Actually, it was worse than that. He lost some of the evidence.
He did that just because he loved someone?
Yes, but what he did was also illegal. In the end, even though I knew the right thing to do was to turn him in, I couldn't. So I left the force instead.
Anne paused, looking up into his eyes.
Why are you telling me this?
I need you to know how important the law is to me. How I can't just ignore it, even if I want to.
Because you want to do the right thing, Anne said, reaching up to touch his face.
Because I have to do the right thing. It isn't just my job. It's who I am.
And what's the right thing to do now? She whispered.
I should go, he whispered back. But I can't.
And then he kissed her.
Chapter 11
Anne melted into Gareth's arms, and when they finally pulled apart, she stared at him breathlessly. She knew Gareth was a man who believed in doing things the right way, but who'd have thought that extended to his kissing abilities? Because his kiss had been more than right. It had been perfect.
You realize it's going to be a long walk back to my car without any shoes, Gareth said. Even though he was clearly conflicted over his feelings for her, he said it with a smile. Anne's heart leapt at his grin. He usually seemed so very serious, as if the world wasn't something to be enjoyed.
We're not in a hurry, are we? She asked.
No, Gareth said slowly. I guess we're not.
Anne liked the fact that he was making time for her. She liked the fact that he held her hand as they walked, while rubbing the pad of his thumb against the inside of her palm in unconsciously sensuous circles. And she liked the way he looked at the city around them as if he was seeing it for the first time, but he still kept looking back at her. Oh yes, she most definitely liked him. She might even, she thought, with a giddy little inner twirl of her heart, be starting to fall in love with him. When we get back to the restaurant, how about we go back in for some food? She suggested. I don't know about you, but I'm hungry.
That's because we never got around to ordering or eating lunch.
I couldn't wait another second to show you around, she pointed out, laughing. I think it was worth it, don't you?
Absolutely.
When they got back to the restaurant and finally ordered, she was so incredibly tempted to reach over the table, pull Gareth forward, and kiss him again. Only, she wanted to savor the moment and build up slowly to what she hoped would come next. Their physical attraction was key, of course, but she wanted to get to know everything about him so that they could build a connection that was deeply emotional as well. Did you always want to be a detective?
Actually, I wanted to be a football player when I was a little kid, Gareth replied with a laugh. But after the second time I broke my nose, I nixed that idea.
And that's when you decided to become a cop? He shook his head, his expression serious again.
My father was an honest man. He's the one who taught me how important it is to obey the rules. He was strict, but he was a good man. Always.
Gareth's mouth tightened.
One day, his employer claimed that he'd been stealing from them. My father didn't do it, and there was never any real proof, but they went ahead and fired him anyway. That made life hard for us for a while.
Oh, Gareth, I'm sorry. That sounds horrible.
It was, he agreed, until a police detective who was on the case started digging deeper. He said the facts didn't quite seem to line up, and he couldn't sleep at night if an innocent man with a young family had been penalized for something he hadn't done.
Did the detective prove your father was innocent?
Gareth nodded, finally smiling again. He did. Now it's your turn. Tell me about your favorite dress you've designed over the years.
He listened with surprisingly strong interest while she talked about the differences between velvet and silk, what it was like working with different clients, and how it felt to look at a bride on her wedding day and feel the pride and wonder of being a part of one of the most important days of the woman's life.
Do we want to stay for dessert?
The only thing Anne wanted for dessert right then was him, but she didn't say that. She couldn't say that. Not when she didn't want to rush things. I should probably be getting back home. Did I tell you I have an upcoming photo shoot with San Francisco Magazine for my wedding dresses?
You have something that important to get ready for, and you still spent half the day planting shoes with me in the shoe garden.
Anything to keep you from having to wear a black trench coat and hover in dark alleyways following bad guys, she teased. Gareth laughed.
I think we can safely say that going to the shoe garden with you was more fun than that. A lot more fun.
After he drove her home, when he was walking with her to her door, Anne knew how easy and how wonderful it would be if he came inside with her. She could pretend that she was just inviting Gareth in for coffee. Or she could be far more direct than that by just grabbing him and kissing him. Except, as she stood on her doorstep, the pulsing attraction between them stronger than ever, she instinctively knew it would be better to take things slower, to let them build naturally. Yes, she could invite Gareth in and have a wonderful night with him, but she wanted so much more than one wonderful night. It was the same with the dresses she designed and sewed. She could throw some fabric together and produce something wearable in an afternoon, but it wouldn't be right. It wouldn't be perfect. And it certainly wouldn't be enough to represent what lay between two people on the most important day of their lives. "Thank you for today," she said. "I had a really good time." Gareth leaned forward, and for a moment she thought that he might kiss her again. She wondered how long her resolve would last if he did. Probably not that long. He simply touched his lips gently to her cheek. "Goodbye, Anne." How many other men, she thought, as she watched him drive away, had she known who were capable of being such perfect gentlemen? Anne half-closed her eyes, smiling to herself, wondering if things could possibly get any better. It turned out that they could, because when Anne headed inside and picked her mother's wedding dress up again, what had seemed so tricky earlier in the day flew beneath her fingers, her needle moving deftly to restitch the decorative edging of the gown. Anne had always known that you couldn't rush making things the way they were meant to be. It was just a question of giving them the care and attention they needed until they were ready. She flashed back to the kiss she and Gareth had shared in the park, and then to how easy he was to talk to, how wonderful it was just to be near him, and what a perfect gentleman he'd been. Yes, she thought with a smile as she worked, it had ended up being a very good day. Practically perfect. Chapter 12 Gareth arrived at the office early the next morning. His afternoon with Anne had invigorated him. Her passion for life made him want to be a better man. She'd also gotten him thinking about his business, specifically why he was working as a private investigator. His reasons for becoming a cop had been so clear, and he wanted that kind of clarity again. Margaret was at a dentist appointment with her youngest child, so when the phone rang in her office, he picked up.
"Cavendish Investigations."
"Gareth."
He recognized Richard Wells's voice immediately. "We need to talk."
"What can I do for you, Richard?"
"Can you get some of the DNA of that Farley woman?"
Gareth had known this was coming, hadn't he? Still, he carefully confirmed,
"Jasmine wants to get a DNA test to prove shared paternity."
"Exactly. And the easiest way to do that is to persuade the Farley woman to provide DNA. It's simple, conclusive, and should put a stop to the nonsense that went on at the mediation."
Gareth took several slow, deep breaths to deal with the quick rise of anger that came from hearing the disdain in Richard's voice when he spoke about Anne.
"You do realize it won't be easy to get her to go along with this test, don't you?"
"From what we could see between the two of you outside the mediation room, it looks like you've gotten to know her pretty well."
Gareth's fists curled up at the suggestive sneer in the lawyer's voice.
"That should help when it comes to persuading her."
"You want me to talk her into doing the test?"
"It's what I'm paying you for."
"And if Anne won't agree to do it?"
"You talked her into going to the mediation, didn't you?"
Richard snapped. "I'm sure if you point out to her that the alternative is having her father's body exhumed so that we can take a DNA sample from that, she'll be more amenable to giving you one."
Gareth had seen and heard some unpleasant things in his time as a cop, but this was pretty damn high up the list.
"You'd actually do that?"
"In a heartbeat. Though it would be easier if you could just find a sample.
I don't care how you do it," Richard said. "Just get it done."
He hung up, leaving Gareth standing there holding the phone.
"You look like you've seen a ghost," Margaret said as she came in through the front door.
"What's wrong?"
When he didn't answer right away, she said, "Don't make me guess like I do with my teenagers."
"Richard wants me to force Anne into giving a DNA sample."
She frowned.
"DNA evidence is not uncommon in a case like this. What's the problem, Gareth?"
"The problem was that people didn't go in for DNA tests in legal cases unless they were already pretty certain of the outcome."
"This will destroy her, Margaret."
Margaret reached out to put a hand on his arm.
"And that won't be your fault." "You honestly don't think it will be my fault if I push Anne into a test that proves her father cheated on her mother and destroys everything she ever thought about her family?"
"No," Margaret insisted. "It won't. It will be her father's fault for cheating. You have a job to do. All you can do is try to make it as easy as possible. So far, I'd say you've been a lot kinder to Anne Farley than anyone else would have been." Garrus shook his head.
"The point is that it's me dragging her into it."
Margaret sighed theatrically. "Working for a PI with a conscience is tough going. At this rate, my kids are never going to get their way paid through college." She paused and gave him a small smile. "But I know exactly who you were when I went with you, Gareth. You're one of the best men I've ever known, and you need to do what's right." Gareth didn't pause before picking up the phone again.
"Gareth," Richard Wells said. "That was quick. You've managed to set things up already?"
"No,"
Gareth said.
"So you've come to me with more problems? I don't have the time to sit and hold your hand while you do your job."
"Actually, this is about my job."
Gareth didn't hesitate.
"I quit, Richard."
"What?"
"I'm not doing any more work for you on this case."
There was silence on the other end of the line for a second or two.
"This is a joke, right? You made the mistake of getting too close to Anne Farley, and now you can't do your job anymore."
"Then it's just as well that I'm quitting, isn't it?"
Gareth said.
"I'm done, Richard."
"You're done, all right," Richard replied. "Don't think you're getting any more work from my firm, or from any of our clients. Oh, and you'd better not go running to Anne Farley to blab what you know."
"I don't work for you anymore, Richard," Gareth pointed out.
"You signed a non-disclosure agreement when you agreed to do this job, or did you forget that part? Look it over, and you'll see what it will cost you if you breathe one word of this to Anne Farley."
"A minute ago, you wanted me to talk her into the DNA test."
"And it will still get done," Richard said. "But now I'm thinking that if we time it right, she might just fold completely."
"You can't."
"Oh, yes, I can," Richard said. "It's you who can't save her. You can talk to her all you like, but if you tell her anything you were told in confidence..."
Gareth hung up the phone with a loud bang.
"Looks like I'll have to put off buying that private island for a while, won't I?" Margaret said softly.
And yet, her expression told him just how proud she was of him, despite the fact that they were going to have to find several new cases, and fast.
"Sorry," Gareth said, "but I need to go."
Margaret put a hand on his arm.
"I know exactly what you're going to do. Just promise me you won't do anything that will get you thrown out of that nice apartment of yours. With all my kids taking up space all over the house, I don't have room for you to move in, too."
Gareth headed first for Anne's house, but when she wasn't there, he knew where he'd find her. She was in the Rose Chalet's main hall, talking to a woman Gareth didn't recognize, and there was a recording device sitting on the table between them. For the briefest of moments, Gareth feared that Richard had somehow managed to get someone down there to force a deposition out of Anne, and he started forward. Then he realized they were talking about dresses. Thank God.
"I don't pay too much attention to what the trends are," Anne was saying. "Instead, I try to figure out exactly what's right for the individual client and her wedding. Too often, people wear dresses that are beautiful, and they're the right style for the season, but they aren't right for them."
"And do you only use specific materials?" the reporter asked. "Some designers are very careful about where they source things these days."
"I use whatever looks right, wherever I can find it,"
Anne said with a smile. For Felicity's dress, for example, I had the perfect fabric in a storage box at home. Gareth's chest squeezed tight as he stood there watching her. He had to tell her about the upcoming DNA test. He had to warn her, had to inform her of the kinds of things Richard and Jasmine might come out with when this case went to court. And then what? Gareth had no doubt that Richard would make good on his threat to sue Cavendish Investigations. He'd likely win, and then both Margaret and Gareth would have to start over. And yet, fearing having a lawsuit brought against him wasn't what stopped Gareth from just walking up to Anne and saying it straight out. If it had just been that, he would have done it in a heartbeat. No. What stopped him was the sure knowledge that leaking information to Anne would be breaking the rules. And whatever Gareth thought of Richard Wells, and it wasn't very much at this point, Gareth had given his word. He'd signed a contract. He'd made a legal commitment. Could he go back on that, even for Anne? A few minutes later, when her interview was winding down, she looked up and spotted him. "Gareth, what are you doing here?" She hurried over to hug him hello. "Are you here to take me out to lunch again? It's a bit early, but I think we're almost done here, aren't we, Tessa?" The female reporter looked Gareth up and down. "Sure, have fun. I think I have everything I need, and I'll email you if any other questions come up." "So," Anne said, slipping her hand into Gareth's, "where are we heading for lunch?" He knew he ought to say nowhere, or that he ought to warn her about the DNA test, rules be damned. But right at that moment, with her lips so close to his, Gareth couldn't think about anything other than how wonderful it had been to kiss her, and how much he'd like to do it again. Chapter 13.
"How did you find this place?"
The tiny diner looked as if it had been transplanted straight out of the 1950s, and it seemed to be run by about 20 assorted members of the same boisterous family, all of whom bustled about. "I was walking past one day," Anne replied, "and everyone inside looked so happy. I knew that it had to be a good place to eat if it made people that happy." Would anyone else have decided to try the food in a diner for a reason like that? Only Anne. And, he had to admit, as he took a bite of his hamburger, the food was pretty good, though it didn't even come close to being as good as his present company. All through lunch, Gareth was mesmerized by every movement Anne made, every elegant gesture, every beautiful smile. And there were so many smiles. He shouldn't be taking this day off, especially when he needed to line up more clients in the wake of quitting Jasmine and Richard's case. So what was it about Anne that made playing hooky seem perfectly all right? And what was it about her that made him smile just watching her talk with the waitress? Unfortunately, his smile didn't last long. Not when he still had to tell her about the DNA test. Because all it took was a half dozen of her smiles for him to realize that the non-disclosure agreement didn't matter. She did. Now, the tricky part was finding the right way, and time, to tell her. Anne laughed as they checked on their shoes in the shoe garden, remembering that wonderful day. Then Gareth told her the story of the first time he'd chased a criminal as a cop, and how they'd both ended up so out of breath he'd barely been able to read the man his rights. "You must have been very determined to go after him like that. What had he done?"
"Actually, he was a shoplifter," he admitted, with a wry twist of his lips. "But he'd broken the law, and I wasn't about to let him get away."
They both laughed then. Gareth was so easy to talk to. They started to walk back to his car and ended up on a park bench beside a small pond.
they bought a loaf of bread from a nearby bakery so they could throw breadcrumbs to the small flotilla of ducks that bobbed on the water expectantly. The best part was that he always listened so intently. When she started to tell him about different kinds of lace and this lovely little place nearby where she liked to buy it, only to realize that a big, tough private detective probably wouldn't be interested, he actually suggested that they drop into the store, rather than trying to change the subject, as most men would have.
"I think I'd rather sit here a while longer," Anne suggested, sliding her hand into his.
A little while later, sitting on Pier 39, they watched the sun start to set. It was one of those things Gareth had heard of doing, but who actually did it? Anne did. She looked as beautiful as ever as she tilted her face up to the sky to soak up the rays of the setting sun. He couldn't imagine standing and watching a sunset alone, but with her, it actually made sense. It was such a small thing, but Anne took small things and looked at them until she found the beauty in them. And when she did, he could see the beauty too, for the very first time. It was almost enough to drive thoughts of the DNA test from his mind. Anne felt as if she was living a fairy tale as she walked along the sandy beach in the moonlight, hand in hand with Gareth. It wasn't just how strong or how steady he was. No, those things were wonderful. But the best part, the part that made it special, was the fact that he seemed to feel the same way. He was content to walk with her in comfortable silence until she noticed a particularly beautiful shell, or until she wanted to tell him about the time she'd been to the beach with Rose back when they were kids. And yet, Anne could tell Gareth was thinking about something as they walked. Something important. She hoped he would feel comfortable enough to talk to her about it soon. Gareth whirled round in a circle with Anne in his arms. He still wasn't sure how she'd talked him into dancing barefoot on the beach with no music. It wasn't the kind of thing he did. Except that here, now, with her, dancing in the sand made perfect sense.
"That's it?" Anne said breathlessly. "You just have to listen to the music in the waves."
A few minutes later, their legs tangled up, they tumbled down together on the sand. They were so close now that it was easy to kiss one another. Easy and amazing at the same time. They held each other like that for long minutes, looking out over the waves, Gareth's arms wrapped around Anne as they did so. It was perfect. Too perfect to ruin by saying the wrong thing. He'd tell her about the DNA test when he took her home. That would be better anyway, because then he could comfort her in private if the news hit her hard.
"Would you like to come back to my place for a late-night dinner?" Anne asked out of nowhere.
"Your place?"
Anne nodded.
"I haven't planned anything, but..."
Gareth cut her off with a kiss.
"I'd love to."
Anne didn't have anything in her fridge that could be remotely considered as ingredients for a romantic dinner, yet she did her best with what she could find, throwing together chicken, rice, and a sauce packet she didn't remember buying.
"This is great," Gareth assured her when he tasted it.
He was always so kind. As they ate, they talked about their childhoods and tried to outdo each other with silly stories of adventures they'd had as kids. All the while, Anne felt as if Gareth was circling around something. She tried to be patient and let him tell her in his own time. Was there any chance that he was going to say that he was in love with her? He had to tell her. Gareth had been putting it off all day, but Anne deserved to know about the DNA test. He'd do anything to spare her pain. He'd seen how upset she'd been when he'd first come to her house, and how happy she'd been after the mediation, when she'd thought it had all gone away. Yet he couldn't not tell her. Not when it meant that Richard Wells could spring the news on her at any time. Gareth put his fork down, trying to find the words. "Anne, all day there's something that I've been trying to figure out how to tell you."
"I know you have, Gareth," Anne said, with a wide smile on her beautiful mouth.
And then she kissed him.
Anne kissed Gareth as passionately as she'd ever kissed anyone, and then she slid her hand into his and pulled him through the living room and up the stairs. When she turned back to face him at the threshold of her bedroom, he was looking at her with such hunger that a shiver of need took her over, body and soul. She reached up on tiptoe to kiss him again, a kiss that was sweet and tender and wonderful. When they pulled back, Gareth looked as if he might say something, but Anne beat him to it.
"I love you too."
Chapter 14. Anne woke up to the sun coming through the window of her bedroom, spilling in and over her. Through the window, the sky was a perfect blue, the birds were singing to each other, and the bright green leaves on the trees were dancing in the light breeze. Everything was perfect. She could hear Gareth downstairs in the kitchen. He'd obviously tried hard not to wake her, but Anne's eyes had flickered open the moment he'd moved from beside her, giving her a fabulous view of his toned body as he dressed. Anne went into the bathroom and showered, enjoying the feel of the water on her skin. The way the warmth caressed her skin reminded her of Gareth. Although, she thought with a laugh, the truth was, everything reminded her of him right then. Last night had been everything she had always dreamed it might be. Not just physically satisfying, but emotionally satisfying as well. There hadn't been any barriers between them, just so many sweet yet sinful moments, where she wasn't sure where she stopped and he began. She dried off, then put on a sky-blue T-shirt she'd customized with silver stitching around the edges, and a pair of jeans with extra decorative patches. Every small thing leapt out at her this morning, from just how much she appreciated the old pictures on the wall, to how stunning her mother's wedding dress looked on one of her dressmaking stands in the living room. And then there was Gareth. He stood in the kitchen with his back to her, cooking scrambled eggs on the stove. He turned as Anne entered the room, and she was on the way to give him a good morning kiss when they were interrupted by a knock at the door. She was surprised when he quickly moved past her.
"Why don't you go ahead and start on breakfast?"
Since he had just gone to the trouble of making her breakfast, Anne took her plate of eggs and toast to the kitchen table by the window. They tasted great, just the way she would have made them herself. She was on her second or third mouthful when the sound of Gareth's raised voice drew her attention.
"I don't care who you say you are. You aren't coming in. You think you can help her hide from this?" another man's voice demanded in a hard tone. "I was told to deliver this to Anne Farley, and you aren't going to stop me from doing my job. Want to bet?"
Anne shot up from the table, spilling her scrambled eggs as she hurried through to the hall. The man at the door was big and tough-looking, dressed in a dark suit and holding an envelope. "What's going on?" He started to step past Gareth, but Gareth wouldn't let him pass.
"Anne Farley?"
"Yes," Anne said. "That's me. Who are you?"
"My name is Terence Blythe. I work for Richard Wells, Jasmine Turner's lawyer. He asked me to inform you that Ms. Turner intends to submit a DNA test, proving that she's Edward Farley's daughter."
He threw the envelope to her, and she caught it out of sheer reflex.
"Those are the details. He also told me to let you know that if you don't agree to take part in this DNA test, he will ask the judge to consider your non-cooperation when it comes to deciding how much to award,
and that he'll press for the exhumation of Edward Farley to get the DNA evidence he needs.
Wait a minute, Anne said, staring down at the envelope. She looked back at the man at the door. I don't understand.
That's your problem, lady. Have a nice day.
He walked off, leaving Anne standing there, trying to make sense of what had just happened. Have a nice day? She'd been having a nice day. The best day ever, and now. Her eyes were starting to blur with tears as Gareth put his arms around her and took her into the living room. His voice was gentle.
I'm sorry. I should have warned you, but...
You should have warned me. Suddenly, Anne felt as if the hardwood floor beneath her was falling away. You knew? Anne tried to ignore the negative feelings that suddenly sprang up, the way she had done so many times before. But this time, it was like trying to plug the Hoover Dam with her finger. She pushed back from Gareth and stared at him as if she didn't even know him, because right then, she wasn't sure she did. Especially when he said,
"Yes, Anne, I knew."
You knew, and you didn't say anything? Each word felt brittle as it fell from her lips. How could you let them blindside me like this?
At first, I didn't say anything about it because I couldn't. I had a legal obligation not to.
And rules are rules, Anne said, half turning away from him as she felt the tears starting to well up in her eyes. Years' worth of tears began to fall, tears she'd managed to hold back through her sheer determination to be happy.
I tried to tell you, he insisted.
When? When did you try?
I needed to find a way to tell you that wouldn't hurt so much, but it was so hard, and I couldn't figure out how to do it last night. I hoped it would be easier this morning, and that I could find a way to explain it without hurting you.
Anne whirled back toward him, her hands balling into fists. You think that this doesn't hurt? Oh, God, it hurt. It hurt so much. It was as if her parents had died all over again. For years, Anne had worked hard to press that pain down. The depths of hurt drowned her every time she tried to breathe. She'd only managed it by remembering how much her parents had loved one another, by clinging to that knowledge as tightly as she could. But it had been a lie. All of it. Jasmine and her lawyer wouldn't ask for a DNA test if they thought there was even the remotest possibility that Edward Farley wasn't Jasmine's father. Which meant that all the time her father had claimed to love her mother so much, all the time their marriage had seemed so perfect, he'd been having an affair with some other woman, and had been the father of another little girl.
Anne, Gareth began, reaching out to touch her shoulder.
Leave me alone. Anne had wanted to believe that she and Gareth had found the same magical love as her parents, but now she knew that the two of them were just as big a lie as her parents had been, because the whole time she'd been in Gareth's arms, kissing and sharing her bed with him, he'd known what was going to happen. In her rush to get away from him, she crashed into her mother's wedding gown on the dress stand. Wedding dresses were a symbol of two people promising to love one another, promising to be faithful to one another. Anne had made her living stitching together a symbol of perfect love, but now she knew that love was the biggest lie of all.
I hate this stupid thing.
She tore the dress from the stand, wanting to tear it into rags, then burn those rags like the meaningless scraps of fabric they were. Her fingers ripped at it, pulling apart seams and opening up lines of stitching like wounds. And yet, none of it, none of the mess she'd just made of the once beautiful dress, looked as bad as she felt right then.
Anne, what are you doing?
He caught her arms and pulled her back from the dress, holding her against his chest. Anne fought to break free from him, She wasn't going to let herself cry in his arms the way she had before. And she definitely wasn't going to let him promise her that everything would be all right. Nothing was all right, and wouldn't ever be again. Let me go.
I know how upset you are right now, Gareth said, as she pushed away from him. But don't keep destroying your mother's dress. Not when I know how much it means to you.
You don't know anything about me, Anne snapped back, letting herself lash out for the first time in her life. I was stupid enough to think I loved you. That love is just a word, isn't it? Just something people say to try to feel better about their pointless lives.
That's not what love is, Gareth insisted.
No, you're right, Anne said. Love isn't even that, because it doesn't make you feel better. It just tears you up inside. Gareth reached out to put his hands on her waist, and wouldn't let her evade his touch no matter how she tried.
You have to keep believing in love.
Why should I, when it's just another lie?
Because love is real.
And how could you possibly know that? He didn't hesitate.
Because I love you.
A part of Anne wanted so desperately to believe him. Because if she could believe in his love, then maybe. No, she wasn't going to put her faith in any more fairy tales. She couldn't. She broke free of his grip. Get out, Gareth. Just get out.
Anne.
Get out! A few seconds later, when the door closed behind him with a soft click, Anne collapsed on the pile of ripped and ruined fabric from her mother's wedding dress, and cried every last one of the tears she'd held back since she was a little girl, standing at the window with her mother, watching the taxi take her father away one more time. Chapter 15. Gareth waited in his car outside Richard Wells's office until he saw the lawyer leave. Gareth had set up a meeting for him using a false name. What he was about to do would only work if the lawyer wasn't here in his office. Even then, Gareth would be breaking so many laws he could barely believe he was really about to do this. Breaking and entering, burglary, possibly even industrial espionage. If he was caught, he could not only get his PI license revoked, but maybe even end up in jail. But if it helped Anne, he didn't care. All those years of sticking to the letter of the law were gone in a flash. For Anne, he'd gladly break the rules if it would take away her look of betrayal when she'd realized that he knew about the DNA test. If what he was doing would restore her faith in him, it would be worth it. Was this what Brian had felt when he'd found out his girlfriend's son was caught up with a bad group? Gareth had spent so long hanging on to his certainty that things were black and white, and that Brian had done the wrong thing. And yet, with Anne's happiness on the line, he could suddenly see so clearly why someone would break the rules for someone they loved. Just as Brian's fiancée had said, love changed everything. Absolutely everything. Gareth got out of his car and strode across to the law offices, making sure he looked confident as he said hello to the receptionist, then headed to the office area. No one tried to stop him. After all, he'd been here enough times to be recognizable, and he obviously knew where he was going. He headed straight up to Richard Wells's office, and a young woman came over.
"Can I help you?"
She asked the question rather flirtatiously, while clearly admiring the way he looked in his dark suit. Gareth, fortunately, had always been good with names.
"Nikki, it's good to see you again. I'm here for my meeting with Richard."
"Oh, no," she said with a small pout. "There must have been a mix-up. Richard just left the office for a meeting downtown."
"I really don't have much time," he grumbled, in a tone that indicated he in no way blamed her for the mix-up, but that he was frustrated by the inconvenience just the same.
Would you like a cup of coffee while you wait in his office?
She was already pouring him one, and after he thanked her for it, he said, I suppose I could give him a few minutes. Luck was on his side when the lights on her phone suddenly lit up.
Please let me know if you need anything else while you're waiting, she said,
before rushing back to her desk to deal with the flurry of calls. It had been that easy to get into Richard's office. For the next few minutes, he was all alone to look out over the city's skyline, admire the mementos the lawyer had picked up from around the globe, enjoy his cup of coffee, and steal a look at the file relating to Anne's case. Fortunately, it was at the top of the pile of files on Richard's desk. Making sure he could still hear Nikki's voice as she dealt with the callers, he slipped on gloves so he wouldn't leave fingerprints, then reached for the security camera over the door and slipped a piece of black tape over it. If he found anything in Richard's file, he'd photograph it on his phone. He wouldn't risk taking documents. 10 minutes later, he pulled the tape from the security camera and then informed Nikki that he'd have to reschedule his meeting with Richard. He hadn't taken a single picture because there wasn't anything in the files but cold clinical facts. The only new information he'd learned was that Anne had given a DNA sample and the results would be back soon. When had she agreed to do that? And really, what had he been expecting to find in Richard's case file? Because nothing could change the fact that Edward Farley was Jasmine's father. So what was he actually trying to do? Win the case for Anne? Deal with Jasmine Turner? Beat Richard Wells? All he really wanted to do was make Anne happy. In fact, he'd give anything to do that. But how? Fortunately, by the time he left the building, he had an idea. A good one, he hoped. Realizing just how much ground he had to cover before the DNA results were revealed at the follow-up mediation, he pushed the gas pedal to the floor as he called his office on his cell. Gareth? Margaret said on the other end of the line. Where have you been this morning? We've had several inquiries for new clients, and I'd like to schedule their consultation visits with you as soon as possible. That's great, he said. But there's something else I need to do first. I need the address for Jasmine Turner's mother in Oregon. 5 hours later, he drove through the pretty town of Ashland, Oregon, until he found the house he was looking for. The sun had set, and small garden lights lit his way up the front path. He'd barely knocked on the door when Deirdre Turner opened it. She looked a lot like her daughter, even though she must be in her late 40s. Gareth was struck by how close her blonde hair, blue eyes, and elegant good looks resembled Anne's mother in the photos he'd seen of the Farley family.
Deirdre Turner, my name's Gareth Cavendish.
Yes, you're the detective who was helping Jasmine go after Edward's daughter.
It's actually quite a bit more complicated than that, which is why I need to talk to you.
I'm sorry, Mr. Cavendish, but I've already told Jasmine I won't help her with this. She started to shut the door, but Gareth jammed his foot in it before she could lock it on him. He'd already broken the law so many times already today. Did one little piece of trespassing matter? Except, of course, for the part where it felt like he might have a couple of broken toes.
Miss Turner, please. I'm not here because Jasmine sent me. I'm here because I'm in love with Anne Farley, and I don't want to see her hurt.
You're in love with her? Deirdre opened the door slightly, and he barely held back a wince as the bones in his foot began to ache. Even though you've been working for Jasmine and her lawyer?
I'm not working for them anymore, he said. I love Anne too much to stay on the case. But I can't let her deal with this on her own, either. Not when everything is about to spiral out of control.
Jasmine's mother stared at him for a long moment before stepping back. Why don't you come in, and we'll see if we can find some ice for that foot. She took him through to her living room full of pictures of Jasmine growing up. It reminded Gareth of the family photos in Anne's home. Deirdre handed him an ice pack for his foot and set a cup of coffee on the table beside him before finally sitting down, her own cup cradled in her hands. "I love my daughter," she told him, "even if I don't agree with what she's doing."
"Why don't you agree with it?"
"It isn't what Edward would have wanted. Jasmine is so angry about it all that she won't listen to anything I say about how it all played out between me and her father."
"Can you tell me what happened?"
Gareth asked. For a moment, he thought Deirdre wouldn't do it, but then she nodded. "I met him when he came to Ashland on a book tour. I'd read all of his books, and I think I'd kind of fallen in love with the idea of him, if that makes any sense. Anyway, after the book signing, when everyone else had gone, he looked so lonely that I invited him to come to a party with some friends of mine. We talked for hours, and I must have reminded him of his wife. I was young enough not to know better, and when one thing led to another, I didn't think to stop it, even though it was clear he'd never had an affair in his life, nor did he really intend to. Had it not been for Jasmine, I very much doubt I ever would have seen him again."
"So Edward Farley is definitely Jasmine's father?" Gareth asked.
Deirdre nodded. "When I told him I was pregnant, it was clear that he didn't want to leave me to deal with raising a baby all on my own. He sent me money to help out, and he used to visit from time to time to see Jasmine." She made sure to clarify, "He and I only slept together that once, you see, and it was clear just how horrible he felt about what he'd done to his wife."
"How often did he visit?"
Deirdre sighed. "I guess that's where all these problems started. You see, I wouldn't let Edward visit too often, because I knew how confusing it would be for Jasmine to have a father who was there and gone again. I thought it was better if he was simply a family friend, because I knew Edward would never leave his family for us. He loved Chloe and Anne too much, and missed them every minute he was apart from them. But he loved Jasmine, too. I'm sure of it. He would have liked to have spent so much more time with her. But knowing that we'd never have him completely, and that it would only end up breaking Jasmine's heart, I cut off contact with him when she was just a little girl." Her eyes were bleak. "I honestly believed this way was better. Only, when she got older, she wouldn't stop asking about him. And then she found his picture."
"I understand," Gareth said. "You had a terribly difficult choice to make, and you made the best one you could at the time."
"I wish my daughter understood things the way you do. All this time, she grew up wondering who her father was, and what she'd done to make him go away, even though I told her it wasn't her fault. The whole court case, I don't even think it's about the money. I think it's more that she just wants something that was Edward's, because she never got to have him."
"Whereas Anne did," Gareth said softly. "Miss Turner, I know you don't know me, and that you don't owe me anything, but there's something I'm really hoping you will do."
Chapter 16
"I've never noticed before," Anne declared, "just how nice the ceiling is in here."
Lying next to her on the dance floor of the Rose Chalet that evening, Rose turned her head toward her friend.
"You're drunk."
"So are you."
And they were, completely smashed.
"Well, what else are best friends for?" Rose asked. "You're totally my best friend,"
Anne's words slurred slightly.
"But this isn't just sympathy drinking, is it?"
"Yes, it is."
"No," Anne insisted. "RJ went off on a date with some other woman, and now you're all..."
Rose made a sound that was a cross between a growl and a hiccup, and Anne quickly shut her mouth. Well, as quickly as she could, given how numb her lips felt. They lapsed into a brief silence, punctuated by more gulps from the bottles close at hand. The fizzy, sweet champagne helped Anne admit,
Did I tell you that I tore up my mother's dress?
No. What a horrible idea, Anne. Why'd you do that?
Unfortunately, getting drunk hadn't helped her forget one single thing that had happened. She could still remember the hurt, the despair she'd felt when she'd yelled at Gareth to leave. And how it had been even worse when he'd actually left.
Because it was a lie, Anne declared.
Hold on. That doesn't make sense. Rose rolled over so that they could talk face to face. Her friend's features blurred slightly when Anne did the same thing.
It's a dress, not a lie.
Can't be both. Rose held up a hand in front of her face, as if she was counting her fingers to make sure they were all there.
No, it definitely can't be both.
Not the dress, Anne said.
You just said it was the dress.
Rose looked more than a little perplexed, though frankly, given the amount they'd both had to drink, even the painted design on the ceiling was looking pretty confusing.
Everything, Anne insisted. Everything's a lie.
Oh, God, Rose said. This is like being back in Mrs. Findler's philosophy class.
Do you remember her?
I remember all kinds of things, Anne assured her. The alcohol didn't help her forget. Instead, it seemed to clear away the walls she'd put up around her memories. All those times her father hadn't been home, the way her mother would always be so down, but utterly determined that everything would be normal. And, especially, the way Anne felt she had to pretend along with her, with happier smiles, bigger hugs.
My dad had an affair, she said softly, before repeating it in a louder, angrier voice. My dad had an affair, and I think my mom knew about it. And now his secret daughter wants half of everything, and Gareth didn't tell me what they were going to do, even though we slept together, and he knew the whole time. And the next mediation is tomorrow morning, before the wedding, to go over the DNA samples. And they died, Rose. They died.
Rose put an arm around her as they lay together on the floor in a messy, drunken heap.
I know, honey. I know. But you have to try to be positive.
Why? Anne demanded. I'm so sick of being positive. My parents die, and I have to be positive, like nothing happened. Gareth lies to me, and I have to be positive. When has being positive ever made things hurt any less?
Not now. That was for sure.
It feels like there isn't anything good left now from when I was a kid, Anne said. She paused to drink more of the champagne.
It's like I made all that up. Like the only parts that were real are the parts that hurt.
Rose made a fierce but blurry face at her.
There were good parts. Do you remember my mom taking us fishing down in the bay, and we all stood up in the boat and fell into the green, slimy muck?
Anne supposed that had been kind of fun.
And there was the time you made us dresses for the high school dance, Rose continued. Do you remember? I went with Billy Stevens, and you were with...
Nerdy Neil, Anne said, with a small smile this time. Do you remember those glasses he wore? They must have been an inch thick. And as I recall, he was the only guy in school who thought coming over to help with math homework actually involved math homework.
We passed math, though, Anne pointed out.
And there was the time you decided that cheerleading was mostly about being bright and positive, so you joined the squad. That lasted, what, a week?
It's not my fault they didn't want me to redesign their team uniform. I thought it was a nice gesture.
Rose kept on like that, with more good, fun, happy memories. And slowly, Anne had to admit that her childhood hadn't been all bad.
Did you really destroy your mother's dress? Rose asked, the idea obviously having taken a while to sink in through the champagne. ripped it up into tiny pieces, Anne confirmed. Rose's eyes suddenly grew big.
Wait a minute. You didn't cut up Felicity's dress, too, did you?
Of course not. That would have been wrong. Her dress is so beautiful.
Your mom's dress was beautiful, too, Rose pointed out.
Anne lay there for a second or two, her eyes half closed to try to keep her tears from falling.
Yes, she said. It was. And then it wasn't.
I don't think I'm drunk enough to understand that one, Rose said.
I don't know if I can make wedding dresses anymore, Anne said. Not when they're supposed to be about love and happiness and forever.
Well, Rose said slowly, you know I hope you'll change your mind when we sober up. Especially because you've got one wedding dress you absolutely have to make.
I already told you, Anne said. Felicity's dress is done.
Not hers, Rose said. Mine. Yikes. Apparently there were some things alcohol could help you forget. How had she managed to forget her best friend's wedding, especially when it was coming up so soon?
It's just, Anne said a bit defensively, that there are all these people who come through here getting married, and you're getting married, and Julie has Andrew, and Phoebe has Patrick. Even Tice got Whitney. What about me?
Rose squeezed her tighter.
Your turn will come.
Anne shook her head.
I used to think that one day, the one would show up. I'd get married and have this perfect life.
I don't think people get perfect lives, Rose said, philosophical now. I think we mostly just get lives.
It shouldn't work like that, Anne insisted.
But it does.
But it shouldn't.
Anne made herself stop before they began a back and forth that could go on for hours.
Have you ever had a man kiss you, and all at once it felt perfect, like all your dreams had just come true?
Rose didn't answer for a second or two, until very softly she murmured,
Yes.
Oh, of course you have, Anne said. You're marrying Donovan. He's your knight in shining armor.
Did someone call for a knight in shining armor?
RJ unexpectedly walked into the room, dressed up in a shirt and slacks.
Aren't you supposed to be out on a date? Anne asked him without getting up off the floor.
My plans got canceled at the last second, so I thought I'd come back here and check that everything was ready for tomorrow.
We already checked, Rose said, as she worked at trying to sit up.
RJ raised an eyebrow at her slightly slurred explanation.
Then what are you two doing here so late?
Anne had an answer for that one.
Getting drunk. You could, too, except I'm pretty sure we drank all the champagne.
There's a little left in your bottle, RJ said. But we should probably be getting the two of you home, don't you think?
Anne smiled at that, especially when RJ bent down and more or less picked Rose up.
He was always so sweet, not to mention good-looking and kind.
A short while later, he came back, lifting Anne to her feet.
Come on, he coaxed in a gentle voice. Let's see if those legs of yours work.
They did, just barely, and she appreciated the help RJ gave her, even as she wished that it was Gareth's arms around her instead.
Chapter 17
Gareth's Jaguar left skid marks on the pavement outside Anne's house the following morning, as he slammed on the brakes and leapt from the car. He'd driven for hours with no sleep, but the envelope in his jacket pocket, and his love for Anne, made the all-nighter worth it, as long as he could get it into her hands in time. He knocked at her door, and when there was no answer, he said,
Anne, are you in there? It's me.
Knowing the odds were extremely high that she didn't want to see him, he called out again,
Please, Anne, just open the door.
Was she sitting in her house, so wrapped up in the misery he'd helped to bring into her life, that she couldn't even come to the door? Just the thought of that made something tighten painfully in Gareth's chest. He tried calling her on her cell phone, but it went straight to voicemail. He couldn't take the chance that she was in there, all alone. After all the rules he'd broken for her already, what was one more? He rammed his shoulder against the front door, and the lock gave on the first attempt. There were still shreds of wedding dress on the living room floor, but there was no sign of her. After a quick check of the upstairs, he pulled out his phone again. He quickly dialed the number for the courthouse.
"I need to know the time of the Turner versus Farley mediation," he said to the harassed-sounding man who answered. "It was supposed to be scheduled for 3 p.m. today."
"I'm afraid I can't divulge that information, sir."
Fortunately, Gareth thought he recognized the man's gravelly voice.
"Jerry? It's Gareth. How have you been?
I haven't seen you in quite a while."
"Gareth, it's good to hear from you. I was out in New York visiting my grandkids for a while. Listen, I didn't know it was you on the phone. Give me a minute, and I'll check the schedule."
There was a pause while he flipped through his papers.
"Actually, they've moved things around today. It's just about to begin."
After Gareth promised to come by to look at pictures of Jerry's grandkids, he ran back out to his car. He sped toward the courthouse, praying he could get there in time, not caring even the slightest bit about rules and laws, as he nearly ran two red lights and swerved between lanes. The only thing that mattered was Anne. 5 minutes later, record time considering Anne lived 10 minutes away, Gareth jumped out of his car and rushed inside the building. Relief swept over him when he saw Richard Wells's new investigator standing by the door of the conference room where the previous mediation had been held. Terence stepped out into Gareth's path as he got close, holding up a hand.
"Where do you think you're going?"
"Into the mediation."
All those years of chasing the bad guys down had made him pretty darn quick on his feet, and it wasn't hard for him to get past Terence and into the room. Richard was there with Jasmine, and the mediator from before, Ms. Williams, was there too, but Gareth barely spared them a second glance. He had eyes only for Anne. She looked, well, frankly, she looked more than a little hungover. Worse than that, she looked so serious, wearing a plain dark suit. Yet despite all that, she was still the most beautiful woman he'd ever seen. Still his angel. She was also clearly shocked to see him.
"Gareth, what are you doing here?"
Richard butted in before he could reply. "You have zero business being in this room, Cavendish. I fired you, remember?" Gareth ignored the lawyer and said,
"Anne, I have something I need you to see. It's urgent."
"He can't just come in here like this, can he?" Jasmine asked. "We were just getting to the results of the DNA test."
Gareth ignored Jasmine, too, as he took the envelope out of his pocket.
"Please, Anne."
She looked at the envelope and then back at him before saying,
"The way I remember it, the last time you came to me with an envelope, it wasn't such good news."
"This one?" Gareth paused. "I don't know if it's better, but I think it will help."
"Help?" Richard Wells's face reddened with anger. "Miss Williams, this is going too far. He can't just introduce new evidence like this. He shouldn't even be in here. He has no legal right."
Anne stood up and asked the mediator, "Could we please have a recess?"
"We're just about to get to the important part," Jasmine insisted. "She can't just walk out because this isn't going well for her. Richard, I demand that you stop them." But Ms. Williams had clearly had enough.
"Everybody be quiet right now."
She glared at Gareth. "You've barged into the middle of my mediation session. You're in some kind of complex relationship with the parties involved, and you seem to be determined to introduce some kind of new evidence into the proceedings. May I ask why you're doing all this?
when you know it might lead to you being thrown out of here by security? There was only one answer to that, an answer that he would happily tell the world.
Because I love Anne Farley.
Oh, very nice, Richard sneered. Very sweet. We're in the middle of a serious legal process, and you come barging in to declare your undying love? Honestly, what kind of... Mr. Wells, Ms. Williams said, her expression much softer now. I don't think it would hurt to have a short break at this point. Not when I think we could all do with some time to calm down. I'll see you all back here in 15 minutes.
Thank you,
Gareth said, as he reached for Anne's hand and pulled her out of the room and into a quiet corner. Anne shook her head. I want to believe what you just said in front of everyone, Gareth. I want to believe you so much. But people lie. They cheat. Things go so wrong.
They go right, too,
Gareth assured her. He gently cupped her chin with his hands so he could look directly into her eyes.
Can you honestly tell me that you don't feel the same way?
Anne shook her head. I do love you. So much. But I'm just not sure love is enough anymore. She paused and looked at the envelope in Gareth's hand. What's so important that you had to burst into the middle of the mediation?
It's a letter, Gareth said. From Jasmine's mother.
Anne looked up, shock in her eyes. From her? I don't understand. Why would you bring me something like that?
I wanted to try to find something that would win this case for you. Something that would make all this go away. I even broke into Richard Wells's office to look for evidence.
You did that for me? Anne said. But that's breaking the rules.
I know it is. And I didn't find anything, because there was nothing to find. I want to keep you safe, Anne. I want to make you happy. But I finally realized I can't just patch things up for you and pretend something is false when it isn't.
He held out the letter to her.
Jasmine is your half-sister, and nothing I can do will change that. But hopefully this will help make things a little better. Last night, I went to see Deirdre Turner, Jasmine's mother. We had a long talk about Jasmine, about your father, about you and your mother. And she wrote this for you.
Gareth handed Anne the envelope. Anne finally took the letter out of his hands, staring at it with as much fear as he'd ever seen on a person's face. Gareth thought back to the eager way she'd opened that first envelope he'd given to her at the start of all this, to the excitement she'd had at the thought of a stranger giving her something. He wished that he could give her back that joy, but maybe that was the price of seeing the world the way it was. He knew how she'd helped him to see things differently. He wanted to do the same for her. "Do you know what it says?" Anne asked.
"No," Gareth replied. "But I do know what Deirdre told me. Read it, Anne. Trust me. I wouldn't have brought this to you if I thought it would hurt you more."
With a sharp motion, Anne ripped open the envelope, took out the letter folded inside, and began to read. Chapter 18. Dear Anne, she read. I know that I must be the last person you want to receive a letter from. I can't imagine how hard it must have been for you, finding out about all this. That was almost enough to make Anne stop reading. She didn't want sympathy from Jasmine's mother, of all people. Yet with Gareth looking at her expectantly, she kept going. None of us can change what happened, and since I have a daughter I love, I wouldn't change anything, even if I could. But I can try to explain. That was enough to catch Anne's interest. She shut her eyes for a moment. There had been so many times in the past few days when nothing had seemed to make sense, and everything had seemed to be falling apart. Maybe an explanation would help. You're probably very angry with your father for having an affair. I'm not sure there's anything I can say to make that right, but I am sorry for the pain it has brought you.
please remember that he and I were both a lot younger then, and your father was so terribly lonely when he was apart from your mother. Anne had never seen that loneliness in her father, but she could remember it in her mother all too easily. She could remember the way her mother had tried to keep them both so busy while her father was gone, trying to fill up the days so there wouldn't be time to think about him. Yet it had never worked. Thinking back now, Anne could remember the pauses and the silences, the wistful looks when her mother had thought she wasn't watching. We only shared one night, and I know both of us regretted what we'd done soon afterward. But then I couldn't regret it anymore, because he gave me Jasmine. Edward was a good man, and if he had a fault, it was that he tried to love too much. He loved your mother. He loved you, and he loved Jasmine, too, even though she doesn't see that right now. Anne's eyes stung with fresh tears, but she forced herself to keep going. When we love people, we want to protect them, even when that turns out to be the wrong thing to do. Edward wanted to protect you and your mother from the pain of finding out about the mistake he'd made with me. Your mother may have wanted to do the same, because I suspect she knew toward the end. I know that I wanted to protect my daughter when I kept her father's identity from her. As she read it, Anne knew this was all true. Her mother had tried to protect her. Wouldn't her father have tried to do the same and more? I'm not asking for your forgiveness. I'm asking you to understand. As parents, as people, we try to do our best. We try to be perfect for the people we love, because we know better than anyone just how much they deserve that perfection. Yet we aren't perfect. We make mistakes, and then we make more mistakes trying to protect the people we love. None of that changes how much we love the people we care about. I won't claim to have known Edward Farley the way your mother knew him, but I knew him enough to know that he did his best for the people he loved, and he loved you and your mother very, very much. Deirdre Turner. Anne folded the letter up carefully. Her father had done so much that was wrong. He'd betrayed her mother. He'd betrayed her. He'd had a whole other side to his life that she'd known nothing about. Yet even as she let herself be angry, even as she finally faced the pain of accepting the truth about what her father had done, she also found another emotion pushing in alongside it. Understanding. Yes, she hated that her father had cheated on her mother. Of course she hated that he'd had a daughter he'd never told them about. But for the first time in her life, Anne could see her mother and father for who they really were. She was no longer wrapped up in a fantasy she'd created about her idea of true love. She was no longer tied to her image of them holding on to each other in the car crash, or how perfect they'd looked on their wedding day. Instead, while they were still the wonderful parents that she'd loved so dearly, they were also, like anyone else, full of flaws and problems and mistakes. It was so hard for her to see them like that, to think that her mother had known about her father's affair, and that the two of them had simply tried to do their best to make things work despite it. But was that what love truly was? Anne wondered. Accepting the flaws, rather than the easy perfection she'd always dreamed about? And was it only when things went wrong or were difficult that two people had to love one another to keep going? Only, she already knew the answer, because he was standing right in front of her. She reached for Gareth and wrapped her arms around him. Thank you for doing this for me.
I'd do anything for you.
Ms. Williams poked her head around the meeting room door. It's time to come back inside. Anne went back in with Gareth beside her. Jasmine and Richard Wells were sitting together on the other side of the table with matching stern expressions. Yet when Anne looked at the other woman now, all she could see was the pain Jasmine must have felt growing up, thinking that her own father didn't care enough about her to want anything to do with her. On impulse,
Anne pushed the letter across the table.
"What's this?"
Jasmine demanded, looking at Anne with suspicion.
"Something I think you should read."
Richard Wells quickly interjected. "My client isn't going to read anything until I have looked it over." But Anne wasn't the least bit intimidated by the lawyer.
"If Jasmine wants you to read it, you can. But she should read it first. Her mother wrote it."
"My mother?"
Jasmine opened up the paper and started to read. Anne watched the swirl of conflicting emotions move across her pretty face as she read. Anne knew exactly how she felt. When she was done, Jasmine looked up.
"I need some time to think."
She spoke to Ms. Williams.
"I need to talk to my mother. Could we postpone this mediation?"
"Jasmine," Richard said, "we have her right where we want her. What are you doing?"
"Thinking. And, as I said, I'd like to postpone this mediation."
"If that's what everyone wants," Ms. Williams said, with a look toward Anne, who nodded.
"Let me see that," Richard said,
grabbing the letter and quickly reading through it.
"This is nothing, Jasmine. Nothing."
He snarled at Gareth. "Where did you even get this? Approaching the client's family like this is a flagrant breach of your non-disclosure agreement."
"How, exactly?"
Anne asked, before Gareth could ask the question himself.
"Well, he obviously used the address in the file."
"As opposed to just looking it up?"
Anne smiled across at him.
"Deirdre's address is easy to find, Mr. Wells."
Richard Wells stood up, pointing a finger at Gareth.
"I'll find a way to make it stick. And if that doesn't, there's still the question of you breaking into my office. Did you think I wouldn't find out about that?"
Anne put a hand on Gareth's arm to let him know she had this. She had his back the way he'd had hers.
"Gareth went to your office to meet with you. You weren't there, so he left."
The lawyer looked from Gareth to her.
"Hiding behind your girlfriend now, Cavendish? Well, don't worry. I'll find something that will get your PI license revoked. You'll never work in this town again."
"I didn't know people actually said that," Anne said,
enjoying the expression on the lawyer's face as she took the letter back out of his hand. She put her arm through Gareth's.
"Let's get out of here."
She managed to wait until they got out of the room and around to a quiet corner before kissing him. He kissed her back, gently, tenderly.
"You're amazing, you know that," Gareth said.
"I love you."
"I love you too," Gareth replied. "And I'm going to do everything I can to make life perfect for us."
Anne shook her head.
"It won't be perfect. It will be messy and complicated. But that's how life is, isn't it?"
When Richard Wells pushed past them and set off for the exit, she had to ask, "Can he really do all those things he threatened to do?" Gareth shrugged.
"Maybe. At this point, I've done quite a few things I shouldn't have. But I'm not too worried about it."
She loved seeing him smile, especially knowing just how much love was behind it.
"Now, how about I get you home so I can help you stitch a wedding dress back together?"
Chapter 19 Gareth stood at the doors to the Rose Chalet's main reception room, watching the photography session before the wedding. Felicity Andrews not only looked stunning in the dress Anne had designed, but she was clearly radiant with joy at the knowledge that she was going to be married in a matter of hours. After the bride headed off to join her bridesmaids, and Anne brought out her mother's wedding dress, the eyes of the photographer from San Francisco magazines grew wide.
"Are you sure this is right, Anne? After seeing Felicity's dress, I had assumed you were more about the classic look."
Anne ran a hand over the dress. She had patched and sewn frantically in her living room, working away on that small singer that had belonged to her mother. In the final hour, Gareth had helped hold the dress steady so that she could do the finish work quickly with a needle and thread.
Even so, the results didn't look anywhere close to perfect. Anne had repaired most of the rips, but she'd also widened a few so that they showed off flashes of the lining beneath. She had created a sophisticated patchwork effect by sewing pieces of fabric from old dresses of her mother's, and she hadn't repaired the torn beading around the edges at all. There was even some yellowing, so that the once pristine white dress was now closer to ivory. "This is exactly right," Anne assured the photographer. "You're sure? I could always shoot this segment after the wedding if you wanted another hour or two."
"This wedding dress," Anne said softly, "is my parents' marriage. Not just the first perfect day, but the whole thing. It has rips and tears. Some have been patched up, some have had other memories sewn in. But it's still beautiful because it's real. It's not some fairy tale ideal of what it should be."
"Okay," the photographer said. "If you're sure."
"I'm sure."
Her eyes flicked across to find Garrett's.
"I'm sure about a lot of things now."
As the photographer started taking pictures, Gareth walked outside and took out his cell phone, looking through his history of incoming calls until he found the number he was looking for. A woman answered.
"Hello?"
"Kira, it's Gareth."
"Gareth?" Brian's fiancée sounded almost as surprised to hear from him as he was to be making this call after all this time. "Is everything all right?" He thought about Anne in the next room and the way she'd smiled, not for the camera, but for him.
"It's better than that. Is Brian there?"
"Sure, I'll get him. Just hold on."
He wasn't exactly sure what he was going to say to his former partner. He only knew that he had to say something.
"Gareth?"
Brian's voice still sounded the same as it always had, warm and ready to laugh as if they'd only just been speaking to one another an hour ago rather than a year.
"Hi, Brian."
There were so many memories to sort through. Memories of working together as partners, along with memories of what Brian had done to protect his soon-to-be stepson. Those memories hadn't gone away. It was just that Gareth thought he understood them a little better now.
"I'm phoning about your wedding,"
Gareth said. Brian hadn't just been his partner. He'd been his closest friend.
"I know I didn't make the engagement party, but I was hoping I wouldn't miss your wedding, too."
He could practically see his ex-partner grinning.
"I wouldn't want that either," Brian replied.
And then...
"What changed your mind?" "Plenty of things."
Gareth looked over at Anne through the windows.
"Is it okay if I bring someone?"
"That would be Anne Farley." He tried to work out how his former partner might know that. One answer immediately sprang to mind.
"You've heard from Richard Wells.
He called into the station with some crazy story about you both breaking into his office." His friend laughed at the thought of Gareth breaking and entering.
"Listen, Brian," he said. "What I did, and I'll deal with the consequences. But Anne wasn't a part of anything. She didn't know about any of it. I know I don't have the right to ask, but whatever fallout there is from this, make sure it falls on me. Just me."
"Nothing's going to happen," Brian said. He didn't even have any security footage. Evidently, it went on the blink for a few minutes yesterday afternoon. Too bad technology is so hard to count on. Gareth had to grin at that. He'd missed bantering with his old partner. But Brian's upcoming wedding wasn't the only reason he'd called.
"How's Bobby doing?"
"Good. He's making a lot better choices when it comes to his friends these days. He's even on course to get into a good college."
"You must be proud." "I am." "Brian, I wanted to say that I'm sorry. I finally understand why you did what you did."
"I'm sorry, too," his friend said. "I shouldn't have put you in that position." They talked for a few more minutes,
and Gareth felt as if a weight had been lifted from his shoulders by the time he hung up. When he turned his attention back to the photo shoot, Felicity Andrews was back being photographed beside Anne and her mother's wedding dress. "It's such a different take on the theme," Felicity declared, looking at Anne's handiwork on her mother's wedding gown. "I love it. It's almost as perfect as the one you made for me. You'll see. This time, 6 months from now, everyone will want dresses like this, with the whole history of a relationship in them. It's such a great idea." Rose came into the room. "Felicity, I don't want to hurry you, but it's only an hour before the wedding's due to start, so we better get you ready."
"Is it?
Well, it looks like I have to go then. Come on, Marcia." She took the photographer with her, and Gareth moved over to take Anne into his arms. She was smiling, not quite her old smile, where everything in the world seemed to be as perfect as could be, but he thought her new smile was even more beautiful. It wasn't just armor, and it didn't come out automatically, which only made it more precious, because it meant that it was only there when there was something worth smiling about. And as he pulled Anne into his arms, he knew there was plenty worth smiling about. Chapter 20. Felicity Andrews' wedding was the event of the year. Journalists were making notes for magazines, and there were several people in attendance who Anne recognized from TV, all of them wearing their finest. Clearly, when the publisher of the city's big magazine got married, everybody made an effort. Making an effort, Anne thought with a smile. Sometimes that was what things were about. Yes, Felicity looked perfect out there, but Anne knew now that it wasn't about perfection. It was about the moments when things weren't perfect. Life got complicated and messy and sometimes went completely wrong, and all she could hope was that Felicity and her new husband would love each other enough when those times came. Gareth stood with his arms around her, watching the ceremony until the musicians started to play.
"Would you like to dance?"
Anne let him take her in his arms as they whirled their way around the Rose Chalet's dance floor, enjoying the moment. She didn't know what the future held, but this moment was as perfect as things got. And not knowing exactly what the future might hold was actually quite fun when she thought about it. Sure, not every surprise would be wonderful, but if Gareth was there with her, it was a reasonable bet that they would weather them together. He stretched one arm out, and Anne turned a neat pirouette under it before he pulled her back tight to him and kissed her.
"This is wonderful," Anne said.
"I have a feeling from the conversations I've overheard about Felicity's dress that it's going to get even more wonderful. A lot more people are going to want one of your dresses and a wedding at the Rose Chalet."
"That's nice," Anne admitted. "But I was actually thinking about how wonderful it is to be this close to you." Given how tightly Gareth held her, Anne guessed that he was thinking the same thing.
"I honestly wish that today would never end."
"Me too," Anne said. "But when it does, I'm not at all worried about what the future holds. Not if you're around."
"Well, I plan to be around for a very, very long time," Gareth promised her.
"Good." Anne entwined her arms around his neck. "In that case, you should know that I've decided to give Jasmine half of what my father left me." He didn't look surprised, even as he said,
"You realize that it probably isn't going to make Jasmine your best friend overnight, right?"
"I know, but it's the right thing to do, and I don't want to have to fight a long court case where all that happens is that Richard Wells makes more money. Besides, I have a sister, Gareth."
"A sister who has been trying to sue you," Gareth pointed out. He had that slightly worried note in his voice again.
"I understand. I really do. Jasmine's angry, and I guess I can see now that she has a right to be. She looks at me, and she sees the person who got all of her father's attention,
And I guess that when I look at her, I'll always see a reminder of what my father did, and that will hurt a little.
Then why do it?
Because it's okay that it hurts, Anne said. Hurting means that we're facing up to it, and facing up to it means that one day... She stopped, sighed, then smiled. You're right. We may not ever be friends, but at least we might have a chance at getting to know each other and getting past the hurt.
You know that settling means Richard will get a cut of the money.
Anne shrugged. I can't help that, and neither can you. Though I might try holding out until he agrees to leave you alone. I didn't like him threatening you.
I think you did a good job of letting him know that, Gareth said. You don't need to worry, though. I spoke with my ex-partner, Brian, before the ceremony.
Anne knew what a big deal that was for him. She lifted his hands up to her lips and pressed a kiss to them before saying, I'm so proud of you.
It actually was easier than I thought it would be, and he doesn't think Richard is going to be a problem at all.
It must be difficult, she said softly, breaking so many rules in such a short space of time.
It is, and I don't plan on making it a habit. But it turns out that there are also good reasons to break them sometimes, and I can't think of a better reason than you. What Brian did for Kira, I understand it now. You will come with me to his wedding, won't you?
I do love a good wedding. She paused, laughing. Of course I'll come. Anywhere that you are, I want to be. Anne could so easily imagine waking up beside him years from now. 10, 20, 40 years from now. His expression grew serious as he said,
There's something else I wanted to tell you.
You can tell me anything. His mouth curved up before he said,
I'm going to change the focus of my business so that I spend my time reuniting families, finding loved ones who have run away or disappeared, finding the descendants of people who've died with no will or without leaving details on how to contact their family. It's a whole branch of investigation that really interests me.
She could see Gareth doing it brilliantly, bringing families together and changing lives for the better. I love that you're going to help reunite families.
That's not all I want to do, he said, as he pulled her closer, despite the fact that the music had stopped.
Tell me what you want, Gareth. Because whatever it was, she had a feeling she already wanted it too.
I want to start my own family. With you.
That sounds... Anne tried to think of the right word, and she realized there really was only one word for it. Perfect. Epilogue. Cleaning up after a wedding was exhausting, no matter how many people were helping. Even with Gareth joining in and keeping Anne's mind on the job, in a way even Rose had never been able to manage. There was still so much to do after an enormous wedding like Felicity Andrews that it seemed as if they would never get to the end of it all. Rose watched the two of them, thinking how good they looked together. Anne reached out to touch Gareth from time to time, as if she could still barely believe he was real. Or maybe just because she knew that she could. Rose was happy for her friend. If anyone deserved a happy ending, it was Anne. Phoebe was there too, clearing away the flowers, looking so different these days in ways that had nothing to do with her colorful wardrobe, and everything to do with the fact that she spent most of her free time with Patrick. Tice was still in Colorado with Whitney, and even though it hadn't been easy to put on this wedding without him, Rose was absolutely thrilled that they'd rediscovered their love after 5 years apart. So many friends made so happy. That was what Rose loved about the wedding business. Even when the details were as overwhelming as they'd been for Felicity's wedding, in the end, it was all about love. And soon, it was going to be her turn to walk down the aisle. She and Donovan had taken their time, carefully planning out the future,
They'd even started to build a house together. Her wedding date was almost here. So why did she feel as if there was something not quite right? Given the extensive planning they'd done and her expertise, it should be the most beautiful wedding ever. Frustrated with her train of thought, Rose picked up a heavy garbage bag and headed for the dumpster at the very edge of her property, but the train just chugged right along with her. RJ came out of the building and frowned as he caught her standing in the middle of the lawn, gripping the garbage bag for dear life.
"Still feeling the champagne from last night, aren't you?" he teased. "The rest of us have got it covered here. Why don't you sit down with a big bottle of water?"
Normally, she wouldn't have shirked her post-wedding duties. But tonight, all she could do was nod and let him take the bag from her.
"You did a great job with this wedding. You should be proud of what you've created at the Rose Chalet. Really proud."
Maybe, she mused, as he walked off to throw out the garbage, RJ was right about the post-champagne headache that had been burning around the edges of her brain all day. Best friend or not, she shouldn't have gotten drunk with Anne the night before the biggest wedding of her career. Rose couldn't even remember now how it had all happened. But she could remember who had helped take her home, and before that, how Anne had asked if she'd ever shared a perfect kiss with someone, one that had made her feel cherished and loved. She also remembered that she hadn't told Anne the truth last night about the identity of the man who had given her the perfect kiss. How could she, when it hadn't been Donovan? This has been The Wedding Dress, Four Weddings and a Fiasco, Book 4. Written by Lucy Kevin. Narrated by Eva Kaminsky. Copyright 2011 to 2013 by Oak Press, LLC. Production copyright 2014 by Oak Press, LLC.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.